and then I'll just meet you tomorrow, or yeah, tonight, to tomorrow morning.
That's working.
Okay. Yeah, send it to me in an audio file via email. It should be able to go, right?
It'll be in that directory, meeting recordings. Oh.
Can you zip it and send it? Will it be too large?
What time are you leaving?
It fits here. Right?
Yeah.
So at any point tomorrow, if there's a way to send it.
I'm going to be in trouble tomorrow. But no, I'm not going
to. Meet for lunch? I'll take you to a good place.
I'll get it to you somehow.
Put it on one of these and call me when you roll into town and I'll meet you wherever you are.
Okay.
We could do that.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Okay. I guarantee by the time you get there, I will be through with the part that's up here. That's great.
So if you guys can help me out,
if you could.
Yep.
That's true.
Yeah. Hey Steve, got 1 second? As soon as you're done, I just gotta grab one.
How are you?
Good. I'm going to staple that for me so my clip is
still better than good.
Yeah.
How are you?
So you were asking
which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. If you got 6, that's good. Hold on to that because we may need. Once we get the rest. Before we get to each one, we'll just do a quick thing on that topic. So I'm just going to do
it. I usually don't complain, and it's not a complaint.
Tom, to reflect the real truth.
Well, as we were talking at the committee meeting this morning, all these are on Google.
So we'll start with one of
my favorite stories is.
Yeah, they say they're crafty.
the real job.
So basically, that's the first paragraph.
No, Glendale is.
They made this a big little version of that, so they made
it. Steve,
Good afternoon. I call this third meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection Planning Council to order. My name is John Weingart. I live in Surgeonsville in Hunterdon County. Other members, please introduce themselves.
Jack Schmeyer, Morris County Freeholder.
Debbie Pascarelli, Warren County Representative, Greenwich Township.
Michael Salavara, Bernardsville Councilperson, Somerset County.
Amy Letts from Persephone. Tracy Carluccio from Hunterdon County, Public Representative.
Tim Dillingham, I live in Hopewell in Mercer County, I'm a public member.
And Kurt Olstead, Chester Township, public member.
Scott Whitenack, public member from Morris County.
We have a quorum. This meeting was advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, and like all our events and activities, it's publicized on the Council's website. All who wish, please rise to the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have our minutes from way back 7 days ago from our last meeting.
Make a motion to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Aye.
If there's a second, then we can, I know there are a couple of
I'll second comments. That motion.
And then amendments or comments, corrections?
On page 6, paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, just to clarify, I suggested that there be a cross-reference of the legislative demands and the various elements of the plan and supporting documents. If you could say that, I'll be back.
Okay. And give me this.
Yep, I do. Hold on. Bear with me here while I find my copy. I want that copy. Which.
Chairman, while we're waiting, I see here that we each have been given a copy of the Highlands Act. I have it on a CD, and it might be more convenient for members to have it on a CD, and I'll be happy to forward that to the executive director, and he can distribute it on CD. Easier to look up references at that point.
We'll make copies, Bradley. Okay.
My marked copy's not here, but the most significant change is you received a copy of page 8 of the minutes. lost that. Page 8 of the minutes that Tom just distributed, that begins at the top, Ms. Pasquinelli. We revised this. I didn't think this was a discussion of some comments I've made at the last meeting, and the original draft didn't reflect what had occurred. Tom went back to the, it's not a tape, whatever, we have our digital recording. Revise this. I think this is consistent with the discussion, so I propose this new page 8 as an amendment. And also, oh, here it is. On the last page, page 10 of the minutes, 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraph down, Ms. Pasquarelli said the council should be doing what the DEP couldn't do. I believe it was Ms. Carluccio that actually said that.
Right.
We have to take credit for it.
Okay.
It's through page 5, last paragraph. Some comments from me. In order of time to examine the policy issues, and I asked when the council should be examining those. I think it was actually I asked when we would be making decisions relative to the policy issues. Last but not least, page 9, into third paragraph. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 paragraph down, the fourth line referenced, such as leave regarding amending the papers that we're using, the documents for review, the policy decisions, such as leave the technical memoranda as they are, but take the white paper and the background paper and reform them into one. That's all.
Correct. That's the amendment?
Yes, the motion stands as amended.
Then I second it as amended.
Okay. Any other comments or corrections to the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
The record should note that we have unanimity on an issue that we voted on.
Yes. The record should also note that while we started the meeting late, we were only 4 minutes late. My report, a couple of brief things. I introduced at last week's meeting, but I'll do so again, our two people sitting in the batter's box over there to join us on the council, Eric Peterson and Taisha Way, freeholders from Hunter and Passaic County, respectively, who were both nominated by the governor to be members of council and are scheduled to be heard by the Senate Judiciary. Their nominations are scheduled to be heard by the Judiciary Committee on Monday, and so all goes well, they will move up to this table shortly. Also wanted to, last week, and we're considering most of this meeting a working session or really a session of the committee as a whole, the whole council, and that was much of our discussion last week and it will be again today. As a result, we did not have a comment period during the formal meeting last week, but rather had one after the close of the meeting. And three members of council, Debbie Pasquarelli, Jas Kovach, and myself, stayed for that and heard comments from, I think, 6 people. And you'll find in your packets a summary of the comments that were made by those people. That is the format we will follow tonight and for the next several meetings that are working sessions, where we will work till 10 o'clock and we'll conclude promptly at 10 o'clock and then shortly thereafter convene a public hearing, and at least I will stay and anyone else, other members who want to, and we'll hear comments from anybody who's here who would like to comment at that time. The only other thing I'll add is that the beginning, we're discussing a substance of the plan today and the next few weeks. To some extent, boilerplate parts of it, the introduction and the concluding sections, are well underway to being written by the staff. And we need to create a way for the council members to review those sections, even though I don't think there'll be much debate on them, but there may be editing suggestions. So I'm not prepared to suggest how we do that, but between now and next week, if members have suggestions or if you would like to be part of a sort of ad hoc committee to review those, let me know and we can kind of figure out next week how we handle them. By next week, I think, or soon after next week, they'll be ready to be reviewed. That's the end of my comments. comments? Does any other members have things to report at this time?
I'd just like to comment, if, as long as no one else is. Last Thursday's meeting was certainly notable. The press thought it was so, and so did many of us. The sad fact is, while there was a lot of good in that meeting, nothing substantive was accomplished because of, I think, burrowing into some of the areas that it was not necessary, in my opinion, for us to burrow so deeply into. I'm not suggesting that you can't speak about these things. All I'm suggesting here is that this is a work session, as I noted at the last meeting, and if we're going to move ahead at all, it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that we have to listen to the presentations, absorb what's being presented to us, and then come back after we've gone over the areas that the presentations are covering, and review those, comment on those, and discipline them if necessary to get where we want to go. And there's plenty of opportunity for members to comment along the way. We've been commenting rather easily and readily as we've been meeting for the last almost 2 years now. So I would hope that this meeting is seen as a much more productive session than last meeting was.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would just like to say that I don't think we should try to format our input, really. I think it's better for us and necessary for us to go through the rather messy process of addressing these substantive issues that we have in the policy papers. And I don't know how else to do it except in public and in a kind of messy way. And I think that's just roll up our sleeves and do it. And I don't think we should try to put off till later bringing up really important questions that we need to bring up as we address each of these topics.
Well, I was going to say this after Dante's report, but let me say it now because of Paul's. I think that the way I would like to see us proceed today and the next couple of weeks is to discuss the substance of each report for members to feel absolutely free to and be encouraged to express any points of view that whether you agree or disagree with parts of those policy papers, but without an expectation that we as a group are going to come to a consensus on a lot of those topics that today or at these sessions, that what we're doing is airing our concerns, the information some of us may have, the disagreements some of us may have, to some extent, or to a large extent, for the benefit of the staff at this point. When the staff comes back to us with a draft regional management plan, it should reflect as much as possible the comments they've heard from members here and should identify where there are comments that members made that they didn't incorporate there. And then when we get into voting on the actual draft plan, to the extent it contains policies that any member disagrees with, we can have amendments to change the plan and see where our majority feels. But I think if we try, I agree with both of you, but I'm not sure you agree with each other, so I'm hoping
I think
that,
it just says to see how it goes.
Yeah, well, but also to do it so that we all hear what we think about each policy, but then move on to the next one so we can get a lot of these out under discussion. And also so the public will hear what's said and the concerns, and I'm sure we'll get comments after the meeting and in writing from people who are concerned about some of the issues. Dante, you have an executive director's report?
Well, I'd actually forgo an ED report today and get right to the substance if you wish.
And we have two committee meeting reports on the agenda.
And taking lead from Dante, I'm foregoing the two subcommittee reports, and I promise they're really coming probably next Thursday. We'll address those.
Well, so, council members, we're up to item 9 on the agenda already. So, Dante.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have given you a two-page document with a couple slides on it, in case you want to follow along. There's just one slide I wanted to cover now, which was the work session objectives, and just to explain to you how we focused our presentations today to get to the heart of what members have indicated they want to get to. The way we propose to handle it is that we will have staff briefings that will start directly with the policy recommendations that staff has. You'll see those in your policy papers as Roman numeral number 1, and they're numbered, and we'll just start at the first one and work through them. for each recommendation, you will see the recommendation, the rationale the staff used, and an indication of the requirements and goals of the Act, which was the basis that we took to do our rationale. If we need further evaluation of issues after discussion by members, we have a parking lot of sorts where we can take that information back, rework it, come back to you with something that moves forward based on the guidance you've given us. And so to echo what the chairman said, we want to continue to build the map and the plan, but again, that won't be completely built until you, unless and until you take your final vote to release the plan. And until that happens, you aren't binding us in the strictest sense. You're giving us the guidance that we need to continue to produce the integrated map and the text for the policy guidance element, which is what obviously you've indicated you need to see so that you can make your decision about releasing the document. So without further ado, we will turn to the first topic, which is significant natural areas. If you, again, if you want to look at your slide, there's one for each of the several areas, the topics we want to cover today. The three issues we wanted, staff wanted to focus you on significant natural areas are the following. First, that significant natural areas will be included in the plan in order to protect a site or a region. And typically, that's a site with unusual or exemplary plant communities. And examples or substantial examples of these could be things like bogs or forests or geological features. So in terms of the definition of significant natural, that's the one that we're pointing to. You'll see citations for the definition and how we got to that in the policy paper itself. Just to give you the second piece, which is the Highlands Act specific goals, that's to protect the natural, scenic, and other resources of the region. And here that includes but is not limited to contiguous forests, wetlands, vegetated stream corridors, steep slopes, critical habitat for flora and fauna. And an accurate delineation of those areas is important because we want to protect exceptional natural communities. Protection for these sites includes the adjoining lands that are deemed important to ensure that those significant areas get the protection that is appropriate. And finally, number three, to implement this goal, three items, to establish and maintain the inventory, that's documenting where these areas are, requiring the inventory and protection measures for them, and finally, establishing standards. And as you will see with all of the different topics that we have, essentially we're identifying the resources, determining how to protect those, which are the protection areas so that those resources don't go away, and then provide you with recommendations on the standards that will be imposed to make sure that we achieve that resource protection. So with those thoughts in mind, I'll turn it over to Steve to begin the presentation on staff recommendations.
Thanks, Dante. As you can see from the policy papers that you have in front of you, we've tried to change the format on presentation to address the comments we received from council. Specifically, there is a whole section dedicated to requirements, and then we tried in the context of each policy recommendation to tie that recommendation back to the specific requirements of the Act, and we're more than happy to go into detailed discussions on that if the council wishes. Secondly, we prioritize the specific actions that we're seeking from council here today in terms of what policy decisions need to be made in order to advance the plan. We put them in numerical order to help facilitate those discussions, and hopefully that will make the deliberation easier on the council and make it a very productive meeting. Each of the policy recommendations identified includes a policy statement, which I think is really the subject of discussion. And deliberation by council with the staff rationale or rationale behind why the staff is recommending that specific policy statement. The policy statements are organized the same way as they were before. There's general statement. For example, number one is to include significant natural areas in the plan to address specific requirements. Where relevant, such in this area, there are policies that speak to how that resource information informs development of the land use capability map, whether they inform the regional protection zone, which is the area of highest environmental quality with the most restrictive uses, or development zones, which are areas that have the least environmental quality and would be areas that are more appropriate to receive growth. We go into what we call RMP policy standards. Those are the resource protection standards, smart design standards. For those on planning boards, those are very much like what you would be familiar with in bulk standards or ordinances that would be applied on a site design level. So there's big land use capability map standards, which define zones and uses, and then there's the RMP standards that define standards that must be addressed during site plan review within as those uses are proposed within the respective zones. And then finally, we move into implementation through pre-conformance, where the goal is to flesh out the further details on implementation of those standards and what we call guidance documents. Secondly is the conformance process, what a municipality must do or should do in order to bring them in conformance with the requirements and standards of the plan. And then finally, long-range planning, five-year goals, coordination and consistency, and local participation to further advance key issues, next steps that we're not able to address this first round, or to bring other state and federal agencies' programs into conformance or into consistency with the regional master plan goals. So with that overview, I'm going to just start introducing the individual policy and open up to discussions or questions by council.
If I might say something, I just want to say I found these materials so much better to work with. Thank you all for listening to what we said and implementing it. And I'm finally starting to see how it's all going to fit together and plan just by taking us through this. And it's going to be repetitive for each one of these. So I'm feeling
thank you. Staff worked very hard to be as responsive as possible to the council's concerns. And we appreciate that. I would also like to just make a note before we get started is that there are broad statements. What's that? There are broad statements in terms of policy, and that within each of those statements there are numerous details that will have to be ironed out. The purpose of these policy statements is to start to shape the plan to ensure that what staff has been working on is consistent with the direction that the council wants staff to take. So although there are a lot of details and questions that will arise from them, there will be opportunities through pre-conformance or conformance to address a lot of those details. And then I think it would be most beneficial if we can, as much as possible, without diminishing understanding of individual council members, of really trying to focus on those big, broad policy decisions. And that will help the staff refine, come back and make further detailed recommendations as we proceed towards developing the final draft. So with that, item number one. Policy number one specifically speaks to the inclusion of significant natural areas in the regional master plan. Significant natural areas address a number of requirements under the Act to identify those land areas that are of unique importance, or represent the character of the Highlands, or represent a unique natural feature that is consistent with the goals and requirements of the Act. Initially, we've included a number of natural areas in the plan. These are sites that we feel are important and appropriate to address that requirement because they contain habitat for rare or endangered plant species or unusual ecological communities. We worked extensively over the last year with the NJDEP Natural Heritage Program to identify what they referred to as natural heritage priority sites, and we are recommending that initially they be included in the plan for consideration and that they be incorporated by reference into the land use capability map. So these are lands that include elements of rare occurrences, adjoining lands that are necessary to protect those occurrences of rare plants, and we feel represent a significant natural heritage of the region that is important to protect, and that therefore should be given a high level of protection in the plan. So policy number one recommends inclusion of significant natural areas, maintenance of an inventory of those areas, and inclusion of those areas in the land use capability map.
Steve, one question I think a number of stuff, but I'll have on a number of these. So if we say this is great, and when you get to presenting us a draft master plan for consideration, will there be a list? Will there be a map that shows these areas? Yeah. Or will it
on there are maps, and we do have the ability, if the council so chooses, to go to illustrations. But the there are a series of technical reports that identify where these areas are, how many lands are included in those areas. As we move forward with developing the land use capability map, in October, as we start to introduce the draft, we will introduce all the integrated layers that are a result of a lot of these policy decisions. And you will start to see a picture of the region expressed as zones that incorporates all the resource information that is contained within these policies. So if the council so chooses to include significant natural areas in the plan, to incorporate those natural areas in the land use capability map, then we will do so, and along with other policy decisions, integrate with other resource constraints and put together the land use capability map to reflect those resource protection goals.
Steve, one of the documents that I had read did contain a list, I suppose it was from the DEP, of significant natural areas. Is that essentially what you're going to be recommending?
Yeah, initially, we've taken the first step to identify what we know to be important. There is also the recognition that that is not an exhaustive list. That there are other sites of importance, both regionally and locally, that would qualify as a significant natural area. So there are opportunities, as we'll get into the policies, to allow for nomination and inclusion of additional sites as we, even beyond the initial plan, as we move into plan conformance.
I'd just like it to be on the record. I think I've talked to both Dante and Tom that Troy Meadows was not on that list, and I think that's 2,000 acres that really should be on that list.
So, yeah, I have to sum it up another way. It's that we're using the heritage data now with a recognition that over time we'll be able to continue to build that inventory, and that will become an even more complete inventory. So with comments like that, we know places to look to see if it's accurately representative, but that's what you have for now.
And the additions to this will begin when? Pre-conformance, conformance, post-conformance, I know will be ongoing.
There are three elements that we're going to discuss today: natural areas, scenic, and historic, that have what we call a nomination process. So throughout the continued development and implementation of the regional master plan, a municipality or an interested party can nominate to the council inclusion of an additional site.
Sorry, when did you say?
Throughout. Development.
Today, if
well, if the council so approves the inclusion and the nomination process, staff would advance development of the plan. We call, and we'll, there's a policy issue actually that calls for developing guidelines for nomination during pre-conformance. So really, the nomination process would start at conformance. The guidelines would be established on how that nomination process would work
during
pre-conformance. And then once we go to conformance, included in this would be the requirement for a municipality, let's say, that wants to conform to the plan of having to have a nomination process. So having to have a local process whereby residents and interested parties can nominate directly through the municipality or directly to the council.
And look, before, you'll see your later recommendations are specifically on the nomination process, so we will get to those in detail.
Could I talk to that and then another? I detect some concern about this with some folks, and I'll try to be very direct about it. Mm-hmm. I think we ought to, as soon as practicable, even on a draft basis, release the standards that we're working with, recognizing they may change, to the public and ask people to tell us what they would propose going in under this rubric, assuming that we actually have this rubric at you know, October 25th or December 31st or whenever, and not wait any longer than we have to solicit public input for what we're attempting to do in this regard. So that, I mean, you have a list that we just heard about, and we ought to, I think we ought to release that list, not that it's final, and say to people, what other things should we be adding? And then also, frankly, what things on this list shouldn't be there? Mm-hmm. And at least get public input that way. Isn't that a useful thing to do?
Yeah. I mean, it's a question, of whether that's ready to be done as part of the draft plan or not.
Yeah, the list is publicly available for inspection and comment.
Publicly available now, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Just the
so, Michael, so the list
publicly available.
Well, and just the way Mimi nominated something, I think we ought to turn around this room and on the web and say, if you have ideas that fit this rubric, or you think the rubric's too broad or not broad enough, let us know immediately.
Yes.
So that the staff has a bigger list of things to winnow through or add to or whatever.
I don't think that's going to be realistic, given this is the first policy of many, and they've got to work on it. I mean, I think it's very realistic to have as part of the comment process on the draft plan that this is among the things we want feedback on. To think that we're going to get that and be able to evaluate the comments we get before we put out the draft plan.
Well, you mean do it October 25th and later? I mean, I'm comfortable with October 25th.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah,
okay. Although, frankly, I'd still solicit it and you just have a basket
review at that,
yes.
Or whatever this one's called, significant natural area things, and put those letters and emails in.
Did you have a second thing?
One other quick question. Just to clarify for me, significant natural area, is that a term of our own, or is it a Highlands legislation term?
It is a term of our own that we will reference in the regional master plan to promote understanding. That is intended to address a specific requirement in the Act, which is the identification of important ecological communities and the protection of flora.
I think in terms of releasing this draft, that saying that explicitly somewhere, and it may be here and I just read it fast, would be helpful.
Sure.
On page 5, there is a heading called Requirements of the Highlands Act under the subhead Resource Assessment. Uses significant natural areas in the definition of what we're doing. And I think that satisfies, in somewhat different language, exactly what the Act is calling for. Is that the purpose of this, Steve?
Yes.
No, I think that's not a quote, though. I think that's
not a quote.
I think it's before the quote from the Act. Yes, I think.
Page 5 under the requirements of the Highlands Act.
In the first paragraph?
The first line.
Yeah, that is.
Those words are before the quotation.
That speaks to the relevant sections of the Act as it relates to significant natural areas. Significant natural areas is our term. It is a term that's being proposed by the staff to capture that aspect of the natural resources of the region that is intended to address those requirements that are in bold.
And I'm fine with that, Jack. I'm asking that the explicit, that you know, it's capitalized.
Yes.
But don't send people back to the Act looking for what a significant natural area is.
Right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Now, you do have it in the glossary, so that's good. And
yes.
It's a very specific definition in the glossary. But I just had a question about a policy question. Of course, because this is going to be an iterative process, we're going to be adding many things that we know are missing, like vernal ponds, for instance. They're not inventoried. Am I correct in assuming that before we get to the conformance process, or at the conformance process, we're going to be soliciting from towns any natural resource areas that they have mapped that we don't have mapped, or perhaps volunteers have done, or other groups have done, but also before we actually consider any type of land use change, we would require that property be totally researched in terms of natural resource area.
Yes, and I think if as we work through the policy, it will be clear that the intent is to require a municipality to go through that effort so that the Troy Meadows of the region that are of local concern and arguably of regional significance are captured, and in being captured are included by reference in the regional master plan because it allows for nomination and inclusion and maintenance of an inventory. And then the standards that would apply to significant natural areas would apply to that particular site.
But do we need to also consider establishing a policy that says before any development application or change of land use on a particular property were to move forward, that it must be totally researched in terms of the presence of significant natural areas?
Yes.
Or is that going to flow naturally from this other process? Yeah.
What you'll hear a lot during each of these...
We have a guest here today, and I'd like to introduce Governor Don Corzine.
Oh, this is great.
Where do you want?
We're going to put you there.
Over there?
Yeah.
You can't get there from here.
Yeah.
Don't trip on the wire.
You can all sit down. Yeah. Probably want to throw things out of the stock anyway. So.
Governor, thank you for coming. Let me ask all the members just to introduce ourselves quickly.
Tracy Carluccio.
Mimi Les.
Michael Salvora.
Debbie Pasquarelli.
Jack Schreiber.
Scott Whitenash, Kurt Olmsted,
Tim Delaney.
And we also have the two people you nominated for new seats on the council, Eric Peterson and Tanisha Way.
Thank you, guys.
You too. And I'll also introduce Commissioner Lisa Jackson. Thank you very much for coming.
I really appreciate you allowing me to interrupt just briefly. I'm really here for a pretty simple reason. And it's something that, first of all, I know all of you are committed to, which is making sure we get this master plan created and a draft on the table so we can get to work in public commentary. And that's I could end right here by saying that's my objective, because I wanted to come and visit with you and tell you how important it is. We want to work with you to make sure that this all happens, but it's couldn't be more important. And I know a lot of you guys are putting an enormous amount of time and energy into this, and it's not always easy. I actually read your minutes from at least the last meeting, which was quite interesting, as you try to work on both process and policy and reality. But it is one that I want us to get to some closure on, so that we can do our job. I appreciate what the staff is doing, what the leadership has done, and all the members. Most of you, a lot of you I know as individuals and friends, and I know you're good-willed about all of this. This is a great opportunity for all of you to create a legacy for our state, for the communities that you serve, and so I hope we can get this regional master plan done by, I guess you have an October 26th meeting, a draft, that is, so that we can get it out in front of the public. And for those that sort of spent a little time in Trenton in and around July 4th, you know that I got used to saying the perfect shouldn't be the enemy of the good. That doesn't mean we should be looking for the bad. We should be looking for as close to perfection as we can, but I hope that we can get something that gets us into that dialogue with the public in the next steps that need to be taken. And I really, I just urge you to stay as much as you can on schedule. I guess the second point that I would make is that clean water, plentiful water, making sure that we preserve the resource that I think really drove underneath philosophically why the Island Preservation Act came into being, be one of those central things that you don't lose ever track of in this. That doesn't mean, by the way, I worked very hard with Rodney and a lot of folks to make sure that we have resources to work with those that would have their property rights impinged or perceived to be impinged or were impinged. I think we need to work to make sure that we do everything, and I'll talk a little bit of what I intend to do on that. But at the end of the day, we want to have the preservation that I think was intended in the Act, and that's to protect that water supply and the natural beauty and the support for our broader community. And it must be protected. And I don't need to go through the statistics, 5.5 million people and all that. It's real, it's important, and I think the sustainability of our broader society, including the community here, is at stake in the work that you do. And once it's gone, it's not easily recovered. Matter of fact, sometimes it's never recovered. So I hope that we'll get on with that planning so that we have the basis to really move forward in a thoughtful, careful, and smart manner. And you all already have exhibited leadership. I know this is volunteer work, so the pay isn't real high for the efforts that you're putting in, but we need to make sure that we move forward. And I want to be your ally, your partner in this process, to make sure that you have the resources that are necessary, whatever it takes to move this forward. And I know landowner equity is a very important issue in a lot of people's minds, and I've already publicly made a commitment to come to the public in November of 2007 on the Garden State Preservation Trust. I intend to have resources as a part of that that will allow for the work that I think needs to be done in this area to be made available. Not be everything that we all would like to see on a time frame, perfect time frame. But again, I can't do those things that we need to do on this area if we don't have that plan and ultimately a finalized plan. And that means that we have to stay on schedule. So I can't implore enough that in what I realize is a very hard process to get to consensus and closure on how important it is that you all do that. And I certainly expect Lisa and the people in DEP to work with you in every possible way. But we have a great, great opportunity in the way another generation did with respect to the Pinelands. And, you know, they made a lot of great decisions, not every perfect decision, but you know, the world's a lot better place because of the decisions that were taken, and we can go back and try to make adjustments if we've made some wrong turns in that process. But let's get the process as far along down that. And this is not intended as a criticism. It's come here to say that we are with you. We want to work with staff and all of you to try to bring as much closure to this as possible. And I hope you'll take it as good faith that we want to work with you to get accomplished.
Do you have time to take a couple of questions?
Sure, John.
I mean, first, let me just say, you mentioned the July 4th events, and we very much appreciate that the budget for the Highlands Council was kept intact with what we had asked for, and so that commitment's been very helpful for us. Questions?
Governor, thank you for coming. I think your presence here underlines what we have been saying ourselves about the significance and importance of getting this done and getting it done in a timely fashion. We didn't want to move the deadline, but we were bound by circumstances, and we intend fully to meet the new deadline and present this plan as you suggested.
Jack, I take some of that, you know, change of administration, some personnel issues, other things. I it's realistic, but we have to
put it. But thank you. You alluded to your work with Congressman Kuhnheisen on the federal level to get the Highlands Act at that level passed. And you did work very diligently with Senator Loudenberg, who decided to do that. Romney was a yeoman in terms of getting the House of Representatives to go along with those two, especially the Western states. I know about that. Nonetheless, the funding that was authorized in the Act has not been. Do you have any comment?
Well, if the last time I checked in on Washington, it wasn't in the 2006 Appropriations Act, but the the $100 million was set aside. We wrote, if my memory serves me correctly, the law in a way that we don't lose any proportionate amount of that. You accumulate the amount. And so it remains to be allocated and fought for each appropriation season. And the way things work in Washington, you probably won't know until midnight of the 11th hour and 59th minute on a given budget whether there is money going to be allocated. But, you know, right up to the 10th year, even if there were no money allocated, that $100 million is still in place, hopefully, with strong leadership of the individuals involved. And, you know, Rodney has worked extraordinarily hard, as you suggest. Senator Lautenberg and others are committed to making sure that that money flows. I know I was when I was there, and we will. I suspect we'll get it. But you know it also gets divvied up among a number of states. I think a lot of, that effort is an important one. It is not, I think, actually going to be as important as what we do in the Garden State Preservation Fund to make sure that resources are available. We also want to do some other things on transfer development rights and other ways to generate resources that deal in a thoughtful way with land equity rights. But, you know, I don't want us to lose track of the sustainability in all of this issue either.
Thank you. Governor, thank you for visiting us today. Thank you, Commissioner, for visiting with us. Just a perfect segue to your last comments. I want to assure you that the members of the council, some of us serve on a land conservation subcommittee, are committed to assisting you and your staff with the renewal, the reauthorization of the Garden State Preservation Trust. In fact, we're in the process of writing you a letter of that. So I just, as long as you're here, want to assure you that you have our support on that, but also to ask or to recognize that when we took our oath of office here, we've become advocates for this region. So we're going to advocate for the needs of this region very strongly and hope that our comments and our issues can be incorporated.
Well, I think that one of the strong bases of those arguments, both for the region, but frankly for the whole state, is you can't get away from the fact that this is such a fundamental element of sustainability for the state. Our water supplies are driven by the efforts that we make here to protect them. And so, you know, I think there is a basis for the arguments that everyone has to figure out the right balance in that. And that's what Trenton's about. And I'm sure there's some state senators and assembly folks from other parts of the world that will have a point of view, but I think we have a strong basis to get serious amounts of resources for this effort in that Garden State Preservation renewal.
Governor, I just want to say how much I appreciate your coming here and showing your support for what's been going on here. This was an incredible task that was given to us and to the staff, and to accomplish all of this in 18 months would have required almost a miracle. But I think that we have done a tremendous job in getting to where we are. And I was glad to hear, though, your understanding that, you know, when we put out the draft, we are going to be seeking input, and this will be a document that will continue to evolve.
Work in progress.
Based on the public input, and I'm sure that we'll continue to learn more about it. So I'm glad that you understand that. And thank you again for coming.
Good.
Governor, thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. 2 points, Mr. Governor. I hope that you'll use the opportunity to fill the 15th seat to consider another Highlands Preservation resident. I currently am the only preservation area resident serving on the council, and I have a retail business, and I can tell you that weekly I entertain several, either people in our business or on the telephone, residents of the Highlands region, really concerned about how this, the regional master plan, how the act affects and impacts their daily lives. You know, they didn't choose to be in the Highlands Preservation Area expecting this law to come. They were here. A lot of them have been here their whole lives, and then it came. And I think that these people really, it's a big burden for me to represent the voice of all these people, and I would welcome a partner in bringing these concerns to the whole council. And that's not to suggest that other council members aren't sensitive to these issues, but these people I know would love to see another representative from the preservation area. Second note, if
Kurt, I would only tell you that it's a worthy suggestion, and you know, I think about it. I have never seen a Rubik's Cube created that is more difficult to try to fulfill to fill council member seats. If you read the law, by the time you get done, there are probably three people in New Jersey that actually fit the category of folks that I'm a little exaggerating, but
well,
then...
Well, you're a Marine. I know you can get the job done.
I think the 15th member needs to be a left-handed fisherman, too.
Yeah.
Second point, if I were to characterize the biggest concern of a lot of people in the Highlands, it's not just farmers, it's not just big landowners, it's homeowners. They're really anxious because, A, they don't know what the regional master plan is going to look like. B, they're trying to plan their lives out, and they have this big umbrella just waiting to close, and it's been extended, and there's a lot of fear it could be extended again. And welcome your comments urging it not be extended, and I concur wholeheartedly. And then third, while they're guaranteed equity protection, there is no permanent funding source in place right now to provide that equity protection. And I could tell you sincerely that if a stable funding source were in place, and I really feel the legislature should have done this concurrent with the act, and I'm sorry to say that they didn't, I think a lot of the anxiety would be removed, you know, because the goals are laudable goals, and a lot of the people concur with the goals, but they just are scared that they can't finance the water resources for 5 million people by themselves. And I really urge whatever you can do through the executive branch and through your administration to establish that funding source, identify it, so that these people have some sort of knowledge and can relax a little bit in knowing that, you know, a lifetime of work hasn't been taken away through the signature of a legislator's pen.
I think it's a perfectly understandable anxiety, and we have a responsibility to do everything we can within a complex process, but they don't always do exactly what the governor suggests down in Trenton, so, or at least on a timely basis anyway. So we have a lot of work to do on that, but we'll make every effort to be supportive.
Thank you.
Can I just thank the governor also for coming out? I think it doesn't just speak volumes, but to use the terminology of this place, it speaks gallons. That you see now. The staff has been working so hard, but I think it's going to be a real morale boost. The fact that the CEO came out and is going to really show support for the employees, and I know we are going to get it done.
Absolutely.
Just one last thing. I want to thank you, Governor, for coming. And I think your presence here and the commissioner's presence, too, also reminds us how important this act is to the entire state. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we're working up here at our end of the road and looking very closely right down to lot size. But I think, you know, your coming here reminds us and makes it very clear to all of us that what we're doing is really making a plan that will affect the entire state, particularly those that use the water from the Highlands. So thank you for that perspective.
Thank you, Tracy.
John, not to be left out of thank you. I do thank you for showing up. I think it is very important that you're here and the commissioner's here. I just want to thank you for the reminder also about sort of the central tenet of our work here. And you know, I think part of the difficulty and part of the challenge in all of this is that we are endeavoring to change a long time status quo about the way we protect the environment and the way we deal with land. And that's not going to happen easily. And you know, the damage that we've seen to this region and the risk that it's at are consequences of bad practices in the past. And we're trying to change that. And your recognition, your support of the idea that we can't do business as usual, but we have to change that is fundamental to the economy, fundamental to sustainability, is a very important reminder, because that's going to be the clash about this debate as to how much do we change our ways that haven't always served us very well in the past. So I appreciate your...
Well, I think that's one of the reasons, ties with what Kirk was talking about. We need to make sure that we work on this ownership equity issue as best we can, so that we get that's the trade-off, and I think actually our economics will work out a lot better if we actually really put those fundamental sustainable elements that we're supposed to be working on, protecting the water and the, and therefore the land that provides the protection for that, in a better place. We really need to work on that. And that's this is a great conceptual environmental success, but as a human success, just as much as it's an environmental success, if we do it right. And we will have, it's not my creation, although execution is 90% of the rules, so that's all in your hands. And if we do that, we'll be a lot better. I have one little, Lisa will probably slap me for saying this, but I like having 4 o'clock meetings because there can be a lot of folks back here that actually can observe. And then when you get around to public commentary, you want to be in a position where no one can, after the fact, claim that we were trying to do this, even just sort of half-hearted attempts, make this something that's done in the dark of night. We will have a lot greater, even though it may be more painful, it may be more successful in the long run if we work at the greatest amount of openness.
We had a committee meeting just before this council meeting to discuss when we will have the schedule of public hearings on the draft plan, and where we came to was we would have at least half of them in the evening and maybe most of them in the evening. Yeah.
Just one man's view, but you're doing a great job. I want to thank again the staff and the members of the council for taking on a real challenge. This is not like a lay down hand in parlance of poker. You have a hard task, but we really would like to see the schedule, and we'd like to see the end game where we can have this debate, and I'll fight like crazy for the dough to go along with the objectives of making sure that it's fair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so
interrupt.
So now that we have consensus on significant natural areas.
All right. I was going to thank the governor for allowing us to have light food at our meals now. So what we don't hear, right? What I'd suggest to do, Steve, is sort of as you start, go through all the policies and significant natural areas. Those of us who have questions that can't wait can interrupt the questions, and then we can discuss the whole topic when we get to the end of the policy. So we've gone through the first one, I think.
Yes, sure. We sort of introduced a number of the policies, but number two is specifically inclusion of significant natural areas within the resource protection zone of the land use capability map. That is the most protective area. We include the provision to the maximum extent practical, recognizing it's we're still in early development. There may be certain circumstances where a natural resource area cannot be accommodated in the regional protection zone, but I think that will be clearer as we proceed with the final draft of the plan. Thirdly, the resource protection standards that are necessary for the protection of those significant areas would look to prohibit land development and or alteration within those areas that is incompatible with the protection of that resource. But also allow for some flexibility for management of those sites, recognizing that there will be activities that will be compatible, there will be management requirements that will need to be accommodated to maintain their integrity over time.
Steve, how will we determine the compatibility or lack thereof?
There's a provision for a requirement once a significant natural area is identified to develop a management plan specific to that site. That would look at what uses are allowable, like if someone wanted to maintain a nature trail, what management requirements are necessary to maintain the element. Things like talking to Troy Meadows, invasive species is a great concern. So those would be site-specific plans that would be developed after planned adoption as part of municipal conformance. Additional resource protection requirements would require the inclusion of the significant natural areas in any municipal zoning and land use ordinances. So for a conforming municipality that has a significant natural area within their community, they would have to include that by reference in their master plans and ordinances. Establish minimum requirements for incorporation of significant natural areas in open space plans, recognizing the desire to secure these sites, which would be accommodated in part by identification of those sites within a municipal open space plan. Smart design standards that would apply to significant natural area includes the requirement for a natural area protection and management plan as part of municipal conformance. Now, please keep in mind that any time we require a conformance element, we have the ability to provide grant support to those municipalities to address that requirement. So although we're putting a burden in terms of administrative burden on that municipality, we also then justify what funding will be available for that particular municipality to address the cost of implementing that burden.
I have a clarification question. Throughout this, are we discussing just planning areas?
Right.
That's actually the question I was going to ask.
Just.
Somebody gave us. How much of this applies to both?
Both. Well, it all applies to both.
Always applies to both unless otherwise stated.
Correct.
But primarily it will impact the planning area. I mean, the preservation areas.
We are blind to the line.
We are initially blind to the line, and I forget which council member pointed it out. There are clear distinctions between planning and preservation. Within the preservation area, DEP has already adopted rules and standards that relate to protection of plants. So by reference, those would be incorporated. So if a site happens to be in the preservation area, they would have to meet all the standards, including those imposed by reference in DEP's rules. So there are additional enhanced standards that will apply in the preservation area.
But if it's in a planning area, and if a town wants to be in conformance with the plan, then they would have to develop these standards, these performance standards, correct?
We would develop the standards. They would have to adopt the standards as part of municipal.
We would develop the standards for a particular scenic area, right?
For example, development of a management plan. We would develop those, yes. Yes.
But they could vary from one to the other.
Correct.
Wouldn't the local government would apply our standards to their local geography?
Correct. We would develop the standards. The municipality would have to adopt those standards and apply them within their municipality.
The adoption of those standards must be done by ordinance.
Correct.
But we're not going to adopt or develop standards for every single parcel. It will be for certain types of...
certain areas.
Well, there'll be uniform standards.
Yeah. Yes, there would be standards that would apply to the protection of significant natural areas. If a town has a significant natural area within its municipal borders and they want to comply, they would have to adopt our standards through adoption of an ordinance that includes those standards that would apply to significant natural areas within their municipality.
Okay.
But they're not forced to.
No, they do not.
I think that was playing on the minds of some of our council members last week. I think maybe you mentioned that as we're going down the road here, there's also in the back of your mind, we may be blind to line, but there's still a lot of people that are not quite sure what we're going to affect in the planning area.
And conformance in the planning area is voluntary.
So, that's a great area.
But to Scott's point, this is not selective. If you're going to, if you're in the planning area and you're going to conform to the RMP that the Highlands County uses, then you have to adopt all of those standards.
Right.
You can't just say, "Well, I like that one, and I'll choose that."
Which will make many of the council members very happy. But I think we're becoming very stringent here, is my sense.
That's
very early in this, but I'm a little concerned about, I think there's other council members feeling the same way.
Well, this was part of the conversation that we had last
week.
I termed the conversation. Which is, and I think maybe let's put her finger on it too, to suggest that you've got to be careful if you want to have municipal buy-in to the regional master plan for municipalities in the planning area. They have to be accommodated, and their interests have to be accommodated. One of their interests is coincident with our interest, which is protecting the water resource and significant natural areas and so on. Some towns may not want to take all of the package.
There's going to be a lot stepping back and not taking that first step until they see how some others succeed with it. I'm a little concerned with that right now.
I think
we need to create a document that has an easier buy-in for us to be very successful. And that's where the difference is going to be. Are we going to be very successful or modeling?
I think we're on the horns of easier buy-in versus maximum protection or protection to the greatest extent possible.
Well, we're clarifying it.
Right. To some extent, we'll learn something in the public response to the draft plan, whether towns say we would have bought it. We were planning to opt in, but now we're...
And then they come back to us with a laundry list. You know, right. Other than these three items, we really feel we could march down the same road with you.
Right. Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I don't understand what in this section or what we've discussed so far in the significant natural resource areas is too stringent, Scott. What do you mean, the smart design standards section, you think, is too stringent?
No,
I'm missing something.
I think as I'm listening to a lot of the good stuff that's trying to be achieved, but I'm wondering who is the most vocal and who's coming up with... let me back up. I think what we're doing is we're focused, with us being blind to line, we're really focused on the preservation area, which is right, but we're creating rules that easily apply there. Maybe not so in some people's minds. But applying that over to another area is going to be a little hard. So I'm just going to sit back kind of and take notes. But as we talk about that, and I think we're jumping forward too much when we're actually trying to designate which areas, like the Troy Meadows. I mean, we all agree. We agree that it needs to be included in there. But I think that I'm too focused right now on where we're actually coming up with our codification here. So.
I think when John Q. Citizen sees these things, and they can be potentially impacted by these things. You know, it's easy to support it when it doesn't affect you. Mm-hmm. But when you see it,
right,
and you say, okay, what happens if my 10 acres is designated as a significant natural area? What if somebody suggests I have a bog turtle living in my cellar? You know, what's my recourse? And I think this dovetails into when we talk about historic as well. What does that mean? How, if somebody throws me into the DEP and says that I'm one of these areas, how do I defend myself? Is the burden on me then to prove that I'm not this? Is the burden for the person who says I am to prove it? Who pays for this? And I think that's the anxiety that maybe Scott's alluding to is, you know, if you live in these communities and you start hearing these things, it sounds a little bit overwhelming.
At a micro level, yes, but I'm also trying to apply it to towns that truly don't fit the same definition as a preservation area town.
Mr. Chairman, I just have I'm a little confused because I think what we're doing with these various subjects is we're looking at what the data has told us fall into these various categories. In this, it's significant natural areas. There's science out there. There's a DEP list, and there's other data that we're gathering. And we're not we can't, as we're developing this plan, and it would be wrong for us
I'm
as we're developing the plan to edit.
I'm trying to warn you of what I feel we should expect. That's all.
Okay, I just want to suggest that we shouldn't
Don't
try
worry, everything I'm hearing, I agree.
Okay. And I just think we shouldn't try to edit the science or the data at this point. We need to look at that according to what the Act has told us we're supposed to be paying attention to.
If there's a coin flipping in the air, then we need to. Sometimes it's not always going to be easily definable black or white. Sometimes it's going to be gray. Then we're going to have that conversation.
Well, that's a good point, though, because Mr. Chairman, we're going to slip into this philosophical discussion on every issue, which is to what degree this development can be restricted by the requirements of this Act to protect various natural resources. I think that the litmus test has to be, one, does the Act direct us to protect certain types of natural resources? So are we faithfully implementing the law to protect significant and irreplaceable land forms and natural communities? That's what the Act says. If there's a disagreement about, you know, one of the 95 areas that have been identified, and it's, staff should put this sort of specifics out there. If there's a disagreement that certain natural areas don't fit that definition, then we can go through that nomination or reverse nomination process that we talked about. And then we should argue about whether or not, to what degree, those types of areas can be developed or not developed and still maintain those qualities that the Act requires us to protect. Now, there are clearly implementation issues we need to think about, and the Act makes provision for them, but, you know, if we set the bar of we don't want to change the status quo or we don't want to subject anybody to additional controls on development, then I'm not sure how we're going to go forward.
I didn't hear anybody say that. What I understood Scott to say was that he's going to, that he and sort of what Mimi said last week, are going to, one of the ways they're going to be reviewing what they hear here is through the lens of what would happen if we had this in terms of municipal opting in. And, you know, and clearly other people are going to look at it through that lens or other lenses. I don't think, I mean, you weren't objecting.
Right. No, I agree with you. I'm
paraphrasing. All right. So, are you through the policies here?
Mr. Chairman, yeah. I have some comments that I think are immediately germane. And I'd like to associate myself with Debbie, I think, who said, you know, this is a great improvement over last week, or maybe it was Mimi, or maybe it was both. But I think it still needs some help, and let me tell you why specifically. If you read the first sentence, you're talking about plant communities.
I'm sorry.
In the first sentence under staff policy recommendations, if you're talking about plant communities, it is what I take away from this.
Yes.
And then if you read the first sentence of rationale, you're talking about natural communities possessing significant biodiversity, which at least for me raises the question on animals.
Yes.
So which is it? And then if you go to your definition, which I think a lot to encompass what you're talking about, you're talking about, among other things, geological formations. I think this is way too loose. And I also think that you need, for me, but I think for all of us, to tie this very specifically to the Act. And I know you've tied it to the Act, but I don't think you've done it specifically because you've talked about a series of sections. If you were to tell me that this is relating to one of the things that you cite, and that is, I'll be able to find it quickly, I can read it from here. Endangered and threatened animals, plants, and biotic communities. I understand what you're talking about, but if it's also meant to encompass something else that's in the Act, I get concerned that we're going to either do too much or do too little. In other words, this becomes the rubric for doing X, Y, and Z, and if it doesn't fit this rubric, it doesn't get in. But I might look at the Act and say, well, geez, there's a clause here that sure sounds like we ought to be covering whatever the next thing is, and yet the stance would be, well, it's not a significant natural area, and that's the only shot it has. So at the end of the day, what I'd like to be able to do is look at every clause where we're directed to protect, preserve, restore, enhance, whatever the active verb is, and recognize that we've covered every clause. And I just have a sense that we've cited a series of clauses here, and then some of them have sort of fallen out. They've certainly fallen out of some of the sentences. Maybe you'll tell me they haven't fallen out of all of them. But when you start referring to plant communities, you know, the geological stuff has fallen out. The animals have fallen out. And so I think you need to go back, and I say, you know, with a thinking cap on generally, but I give you those three sentences specifically, which seem to head off in different directions.
I've seen Tom's version of the Act with every word sort of circled. I think that in general, what Michael says is something you're doing, but maybe not in each issue paper at this point. So certainly, you know, we need consistency within each paper. So that
what we attempt to do in here is the goals for each preservation or planning area are extensive. And so what we did is, it's on page 4, we limited the goals that are applicable to the specific issues. And then in the requirements of the Act, we bolded the section in the resource assessment, which is applicable to significant natural areas.
Well, and look, I'm very comfortable with that if that's our understanding. But then I have some problems with the definitions and then some of the sentences.
Yeah.
Mr. Chai, I think one thing that Michael said, and I think I noticed too, was, and perhaps it should be revised, in the number one, Roman numeral number one, and then number one, perhaps that paragraph should be expanded to make it clear that we are talking about these other categories that are later meant bolded when the resource assessment is listed based on the Act, such as endangered and threatened animals, and geologic formations. And so I think that is a good point there. And I think I understand why it began this way, because that's what you began with. You began with the Natural Heritage Database. If you look at the technical paper, it mostly is that, because that's developed data.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think it makes sense, but I think perhaps going back and revising that opening paragraph to make it clear it is more than just plant. It's communities. It's animal and
right.
flora and fauna communities.
That is the intent. Endangered and threatened wildlife species are addressed under another element of the plan, which we'll talk at it in subsequent meetings.
Right, and T&E will be separate.
Correct.
Threatened and endangered will be separate, but I think that is a good point, and especially because you do bold those in later in this technical paper.
Yes.
As being the sections of the Act that apply.
Do you want to just run through the pre-conformance? Did you go through the pre-conformance strategy before?
No, we're at number 5. Pre-conformance strategies is the acknowledgement that technical guidelines will need to be developed that allows any interested party to identify, nominate, and allows the ability of the council to review and approve a nomination for inclusion of a significant natural area. Technical guidelines will also need...
Remind me what we mean by pre-conformance strategy, especially with a view towards timing.
There's the recognition that there are details that will need to be defined before we go to conformance, so we could tell a municipality exactly what it is we want them to do.
So this is post-January 1st, 2007?
Correct. Before a period of time of 3 to 6 months before we initiate conformance. We would go after adoption, we would go into a process of education and information and developing specific guidelines, essentially how-to manuals, so a municipality can
help. I got it. But then my follow-on question is, what are we doing from October 25th to December, whatever? And I heard you say earlier we were going to do something. I thought it sounded good. And can you write it down in here as well?
During the public hearing process.
We'll be hopefully responding to all the comments that come in from the public on the draft plan, revising the plan into a final plan.
Yes, I heard it, and that's great. Yes. I'm just saying,
we can call it pre-adoption.
Pre-adoption.
This is the process for getting things adopted or rolling it out. This is the plan.
Due to the requirements for protection and inclusion of municipal master plans, we'll need to provide guidelines to municipalities so they understand exactly what that is, so it can promote consistency across the region. And finally, a process for adjustments and revisions. Certainly, to get to Glenn's point, there's going to be specific local concerns and to shape the parameters under which we can add sites, eliminate sites, modify boundaries to sites during the conformance process.
If I could interrupt for 1 second. And what this language was included here specifically because one of the resolutions we adopted back last December was that there would be required elements of plan conformance and discretionary elements of plan conformance, and there'd be an adjustment and revision process to allow for local knowledge to inform the plan.
Again, conformance speaks to what a municipality would have to do in order to come in conformance with the plan. The recommendation is to require that municipal master plans, open space inventories, land use ordinances include the standards for protection of significant natural areas. That would be a required element of plan conformance. And also to include those significant natural areas that fall within that municipal jurisdiction within those ordinances and plans. In terms of next steps, recognizing that there will be work that will needed to be done beyond adoption of the plan and beyond pre-conformance, we've identified 5-year resource protection and planning goals. So that's sort of the work that will need to be done to advance the next iteration of the plan, address limitations in the science or limitations in the understanding of the resource protection needs. The specific item here is to maintain and of course update the inventory of significant natural areas and develop site-specific management stewardship strategies for those sites.
One thing, could you just write and update in there? Because I know
yes,
it's implied, but it should say maintain and update.
Number 8, coordination and consistency considerations. Coordination and consistency is one component of the plan. It looks to bring other federal and state programs in harmonization with the regional master plan. Specific to natural heritage programs is to facilitate a coordinated regulatory review program with DEP to take into consideration the significant resources identified in the RMP, including significant natural areas. Local participation consideration, another component is how do we facilitate, educate, and instill an appreciation for what the RMP is and what it means to local municipalities and residents of the Highlands region. Specifically regarding significant natural areas is to develop an educational program for municipal officials in order to help understand how one identifies and proposes for nomination significant natural areas.
That's the policy.
Those are the policy recommendations specific to that resource element.
Are there other comments or questions?
I had just a question back on page 2 in the pre-conformance strategies. I didn't want to interrupt. The developing these technical guidelines and procedures for development of the plans, you said that that would be done in order to decide or measure whether or not an activity is compatible or incompatible with resource protection, in answer to Mimi's question. But I'm a little unclear in my mind about how will these plans then have some sort of evaluation procedure in them, because I'm just wondering, you know, who's going to make that measurement and how is it going to be made, and are we, during this pre-conformance time, are going to be able to accomplish putting together that kind of an evaluation procedure?
It's a guidance document, so it provides information and additional details to be approved by council on how a municipality would develop a plan. The plans will have to be tailored to individual sites. Those individual tailored sites will be prepared during conformance for those municipalities that want to conform, or by council staff for those sites that fall outside of conforming municipalities. The purpose of the guidelines is just to establish provide some direction to a municipality so they understand what the expectation is. Should they contract those services out through a granting program, that there is an expectation of what or minimum requirements for a plan, including things like protection needs, compatible uses, such as a trail system. If the municipality wanted to propose a natural trail within a publicly held significant natural area. And each one of those plans would be subject to review and approval by council as part of the conformance process.
So rather than having, just so I understand how this is actually going to, we're saying this is going to work, rather than having some sort of uniform evaluation method, we would, on a town-by-town basis, looking at their plan, say what would be a compatible use or not?
No, the guidelines would say essentially that an open space plan, at a minimum, must include the following elements. And each of those elements must address the following specific requirements. Those requirements may be like explain all, evaluate the zoning, permissible zoning within that resource protection area and identify conflicts with the protection needs of the resource. That would be a requirement that they would have to address. For significant natural areas, identify the methods proposed for securing the protection and conservation of those sites, or identify uses that the municipality sees as being appropriate and desirable within that site, a trail. So essentially what it does is it creates the framework about which the municipality or any conforming entity, municipality or county, must address their intent with regard to fulfilling the standards, and those will be spelled out in the guidelines.
I think as a council, we're going to need to be involved with the development of these guidelines.
Oh yes, yes, yes. So they would be subject to council approval. And, yes, absolutely.
Right, I'm a little uncomfortable with the sort of vagueness about how we would actually measure compatibility or incompatibility. Is it going to be informed, for instance, by data from the non-games division of DEP who would tell you?
Well, basically a manual telling the town what information we want in what form, and we as council would review that guidance manual or whatever we're calling it before it goes out.
Yeah.
So it's not, and among the things to be determined, probably in that period, for instance, is once we've adopted a plan, at what level of detail are we as a council going to be involved in reviewing plans for municipal approval, individual projects, and you know, like, are we as council going to vote on every one, or
right.
you know, that,
right.
those kind of questions are to be determined.
I guess I'm looking for as much uniformity as possible in terms of evaluation methods, is
yes,
what I'm
yes,
saying.
Yes.
And that it be informed by science or, you know, the needs of that species or that natural resource as opposed to the needs of the use.
You know, oh, yes.
Steve, could you come up with maybe an example? Say, you know, just take anything. Say that we find a natural area that has a certain endangered animal species.
Mm-hmm.
What would we recommend, or what would the municipality be expected to do? And you don't have to write tones about it, but just so we get an understanding or a feeling for how we're going to do this.
Right. And
what would be a compatible use for something that has an endangered species on it?
I'll respond to that, because on that point itself, that idea of us defining general guidance and then requiring the towns to do was fairly sophisticated planning and management for the protection of these areas. I think we ought to think about that pretty hard, because I'm not sure that it would absolutely work. And I don't know whether, you know, listening to the conversation, there may be some level of initial activities like trail systems that we could just say are compatible uses if they avoid, you know, the specific site where the plants are in that case, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So I think just from a pragmatic perspective, staff, as they develop this, ought to consider articulating specifically what the council considers to be compatible uses that could be put right into the zoning or local ordinances, you know, that govern that area as part of the performance. Because I don't have a lot of, you know, reality. What's going to happen is we're going to require the towns to develop these plans. They're going to hire consultants to do the plan. And we're going to get a varying level of quality out of that,
right,
which is what everybody here that's seen consultants report sees.
I want to bring this part of the discussion to close, because I think, you know, what is being talked about here is, like I said, what's going to happen starting January 1st, 2007, or sometime thereafter. And we as a council will at that point deliberate about what it is we're talking about here and what the process is.
Yes.
And there's, you know, all the things everybody's saying so far, or we can debate at that point. I don't think there's anything in these words of develop the technical guidelines and procedures that prejudges or, you know, excludes anything anyone said in the last 10 minutes.
I don't think it does, but it doesn't necessarily either inform the direction the staff goes either. So I think to turn a little bit of detail, you know, in discussion and setting this is not a bad idea.
I'm not opposed to that personally myself, Mr. Chairman. However, I do think that this is no different from any other application process where you have general guidelines and you go before an agency, and the agency determines whether you have qualified in terms of their interests within those guidelines. And if you haven't, there are recommendations to help you make that performance. So I really see this process as being very similar to that. And if I'm wrong, perhaps you can straighten me out, too. But I'd like to get past page two.
We've done past page two, but then we get back to it.
Right. Well, I brought us back there.
Yeah,
but
right.
I think my major point is that we're going to have other policy decisions that are going to come out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just saying that I think we need to have uniformity. And I think it's sort of what Tim is saying, too, that we're going to end up all over the map, no pun intended, with decisions, you know, varying too much. And that we need uniformity if our goal is to protect all significant natural areas.
And if I can offer, that was the intent of the guidelines, was to ensure that as much as possible that we were achieving uniformity among the 88 towns. And if Tracy, maybe as a sidebar, we can discuss a little bit specific items that can be included to strengthen this, to provide clearer direction. And,
mm-hmm.
And I think in general, I was going to ask Steve Thomas, as we go through these documents, I mean, as we get past discussion of these documents, individual members go through them and want to suggest changes, whether it's wordsmithing or policy, that we should all do that. Should that all go to Steve? Should go to the three of you?
The three of us is easier. Yes.
I have a comment that is awfully specific to this, and not, I think, what Tracy's raised question is important, but it stands to what Tracy's talking about. When you come back and redefine significant natural areas, however you do it, if significant natural areas are areas with endangered and threatened animals, plants, and biotic communities, it does seem to me that we're sort of headed in that direction.
Yes.
If that's an I think this particular one may become relatively easy, just because of the significance of that definition. If it's that definition plus something else, then I think we'll have the problems you're talking about. And so we wait to see what you're going to come back with.
Yeah, it will be plus something else, and then we could provide it.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because then what I would suggest to you is think about having significant natural areas, or change the name, endangered and threatened biotic areas, for this very specifically, and then another name for whatever else you're doing. Because they will be two very different questions, I think.
Yes.
I think Tracy's driving right at that. And I'd separate those two in your definitions, because I think it would be much easier to handle them separated.
And there is an element called critical wildlife habitat, which is intended to address significant habitat for threatened and endangered animal species, including the overlap here is that significant natural areas includes plants, but not necessarily threatened and endangered animal species.
Any additional comments on this policy, or I'd like to move on?
I have a question. To the points that Tim was making, if we're not going to discuss them now, it's unclear to me when we as a council are going to discuss and decide this issue.
What I read this saying is that in that pre-conformance period, we will be developing the guidelines, so that would, and that period starts right after we adopt the plan.
Mm-hmm. Or sooner.
Well, and I hate to come back, but I paid attention to what you said. If this doesn't cover animals, then you need another one to cover animals.
Yes, we have one. Yes, we have one. Well, it's coming.
John, if I may. Tom, I think you may be able to answer this question. Uniform appeal process for property owners. Are we going to provide some mechanism, or is there already some mechanism in state law that provides for some sort of uniform appeal process? A landowner, I've been told that, you know what, your property can be part of this significant natural area, and I look at the definition, you know, I really don't think it does. Or maybe I have a historic feature, or somebody thinks I have a historic feature, but I disagree and I don't think it's historic. Or I have a scenic vista, somebody says I have a scenic vista, but I don't think it's scenic. You know, it seems to me that we need to have some kind of straightforward, no-nonsense appeal process. There has to be one level of triage available to a landowner to get either a yes or a no, you're in or you're out, and then they go forward. Because, you know, right now I think a lot of the anxiety is that, you know, when somebody finds the spotted salamander, you're doomed. You know, and the only appeal process is years and thousands of dollars of DEP black holes and chasms. And so I would really love to see some sort of uniform appeal process. And I don't know if we're the mechanism, people come before the board, or there's a committee of the board that triages first, but there needs to think that people need something.
And in my mind, there'll be multiple appeal processes. There will be, when this council approves a nomination, for example, to include it in the inventory of significant natural areas, be a process to say, I should not be included in that inventory. Similarly, there'll be an appeal process at the local land development level, at the municipal planning board, site plan subdivision approval process, where the municipal land use law allows for waivers and variances from local requirements. So there will be opportunities at both the macro level and the micro level for...
Who will ultimately make those decisions? You know, the biggest concern I hear from people is that they feel that people who are entrusted to make these decisions sometimes at the DEP are quote-unquote bureaucrats. They're not grassroots people, you know, in terms of our democratic form of government. You know, so are these decisions going to be entrusted in a group of elected people appointed people, at least by an elected official, or is it going to be just a bureaucrat somewhere on the seventh floor?
As this policy paper's laid it out, this council would be approving the inventory and additions to that inventory. So however you want to qualify or quantify the grassroots ratio of this. Similarly, at the local level, the Highlands Act is implemented at the planning board level. So similarly, it's an appointed
members of those municipalities. And then this council would have review authority for planning board decisions which run contrary to the act. So it's really a check and balance.
And I want to move also on, because I think those are important questions that we will get to later, and I'd like, we have the next two issue topics we have are historic and cultural resources and senior districts, and I can say if anyone has specific, more specific comments on these, I, you know, I don't, you should not hesitate to give them to three of them, and if you want to share them with the rest of the council, that's fine too. Historic and cultural resources and scenic resources are two topics. We can take as much time as we want to discuss each of them, but when we're done with both of them, then we'll have dinner. Let's move to historic and cultural resources.
That's a
snare,
right?
No, it's a carrot.
It's a threat. You don't get dinner.
For the, there's the public here, when we take a break, we will take a half hour break. So, historic and cultural resources?
Yeah, I'm going to turn this one, these next two, over to Chris, and she'll walk you through those two papers.
Good evening, everyone. We're going to go through historic and cultural first, I've been working with Mary Jude on this, both historic and cultural, and with Mary Jude and Debbie Lawler on scenic. So she'll be here to assist with any specific questions. Can you hear me?
Much better.
Let's just get some procedural things out first. On page, let's see, the definition section of historic, which I think is page 9. And if you were going to look for the definition of historic places, the Highlands definition is what's listed as or proposed to be listed for your consideration. It's the New Jersey Register of Historic Places. That's the definition that we are looking at. Cultural resources do not have a specific definition defined by the state or federal programs. They're referred to as therein with the state and federal programs. We're suggesting that cultural resources are sites, artifacts, or materials that relate to the way people lived in the past and are of a cultural importance both locally and regionally.
This is their... Is there a variety of definitions?
For historic or cultural? For both. There would be a variety of definitions, but most of them roll up to the state and federal definition because that seems to be the defining definition for any of the federal and state programs. It also funds and oversees the state historic preservation office, and therefore that would be the most defining definition that is referred back to. It may be nuanced locally.
So we would essentially be, in, as other entities do, in conformance with the Secretary of the Interior's designations, definitions, and also for the state cultural and historic designations in New Jersey.
Correct. And in this instance, the Act, which was in Section 2 on page 6, the DEP in 7:38.310 for preservation area refers to historic sites. So we are sort of, as others have, we have the state and the federal recognition, and then we also have the Preservation Area Act recognition in the DEP. And you can see that on page, let's just see. If you go to page 6, that's where the requirements of the Act are, and page 7 under preservation area requirements. The DEP rules provide, at 7:38.310, provide protection for historic or archaeological areas. They state that no one may engage in regulated activities that would impact historic or archaeological, and DEP shall not permit issuance of a permit.
You say there are 597 of these with respect to historical things, not cultural ones, I take it, or is it historical and cultural?
The state program includes a definition of historic and cultural, and 597 historic districts. Okay. That's what the reference is to.
Do you have a list of those that we could put on the website? Are they there already?
We actually have the full listing of the 597 on the website. and the DEP office, Historic Preservation Office, has just recently completed the GIS layer. They're making sure it's accurate before they send it to us. So we will have both.
I mean, I will sound, I think, a little bit the way I did the first time. I'd sure like to have the public, you know, really solicited, to have the public tell us what else should be here and which ones should not be here for our purposes, if any. And also have, obviously, the staff, in effect, do the same thing sooner rather than later. Then with respect to the overall policy question that you all were talking about before, I understand that it's a living document and it's going to get changed going forward, but one of the big problems with it, Highlands legislation is uncertainty. And I would sure like to try as much as possible to create some, you know, be at 99% rather than at 87% of certainty with respect to as many things as possible, which I think is what Scott and others have talked about a little bit. And I tremble a bit at the notion of, you know, putting more things in going forward. Not that we should rule that out, but somebody who's not severely affected by what we do ought to, on January 1st, 2007, ought to be able to take more comfort in that rather than less, I think. I mean, isn't that what everybody would wish? So I think that argues for being inclusive, at least an investigation up front, and have us, you know, get a lot of stuff in so that if, or review a lot of stuff and make some preliminary decisions, put stuff in and leave other things out, both for this and for various natural areas that you're talking about, animal, plant, and rock. You know, let's try to do it before January 1st, because otherwise we're just going to be having a hellish effect on folks. And I recognize that what I'm about to say is also a hellish effect, but it does seem to me that being more inclusive rather than less, with a view to being able to relieve people rather than penalize them after January 1st, is conceptually the right way to go. So again, what I said the last time was I'd sure like to see a lot of work done October 25th to January 1st, if those are the right dates, and it seems to me that it's critically important. I mean, I hear the stuff about post-January 1st, and I understand it needs to be dealing with municipalities, but in terms of what is there and what's not there, well, I think we want to get it as right as possible and not take solace in the fact that we can change it going forward. In that regard.
Yes, because when you said the list is on the web now, the list that you're referring to is a list that's already in effect.
That's true. That's the state and national register.
So what
sites.
We are doing with this plan is incorporating it by reference, but we're not changing. I mean, we're not adding, necessarily adding anything or subtracting anything.
We're not creating a new historic site.
Right. Well, what we're proposing,
what I'm saying, though, John, is I think we ought to solicit the public.
Yeah. We want to be more comprehensive than what that statement is.
But also the other way around. There may be sites that for one reason or another, I don't know, downtown somewhere, that's a historic site, it's an old factory, it's got, you know, it's a brick factory and it has PCBs underneath or something. We might conclude that doesn't have to be on our list and let somebody else worry about it. I'm happy to hear from the public and the staff in respect of those kinds of sites as well.
Or
maybe it should be on the list.
Yeah, in the case of historic, there is a state and federal list that would supersede the Highlands list and would be subject to those regulations and DEP regulations in and around the Highlands Act or within DOT projects. So we're, in this proposal paper, looking to build upon the current list, share our knowledge of what we know, and be more comprehensive and include local input through the conformance process. We've been gathering information. We have all municipal documents in-house, county documents in-house, state documents in-house.
You make me nervous when you say through the conformance process. What I'm talking about is pre-conformance, but pre-finality of our initial regional master plan, which I'm pretending is a January 1st date.
Can I suggest, let me frame it this way. I think what Michael's saying is that we have some defined lists of place-based things, right, whether they're natural places or historic places. That list is going to be in the plan, and that when we publish the plan, the draft plan for public review, that we also open a solicitation process.
Correct.
That we get recommendations from the public to add or remove sites from that list. That gets closed at the end of the public hearing process. We consider whether those sites should be added or removed, right? And so when the plan is finalized prior to conformance, it will have a definitive, predictable list of places that are affected by the regulations.
And I think that's a good plan. I do think that's going to run us into problems, timing problems, because for any individual site we suggest, we should have a full public comment process that gives everybody some, and that's going to take time that I don't see us having until after we've adopted the plan. But
well, I guess I'm suggesting that we do that in the list, as a list.
You might do that one
as, as a list, as a whole. So we have, you know, we start with 597 or whatever the number was. Let's say we end up with 625, that we take comments on those. You know, and then as we go forward in conformance, there can be a more detailed, but you know, he's saying allow, you know, an initial first blush examination of it and suggestions.
I have a severe problem with opening this up so broadly. If we are going to meet certain established criteria for historic sites, for example, and we accept public input on that, somebody is going to do as somebody here suggested and say, you know, there's a foundation in the back of my house at the end of the property that I heard was involved in some Civil War activities, and there are little metal bullet fragments that I come across every once in a while. I think it needs to have been investigated. It needs to have been vetted. This is not the job for the Highlands Council
really,
to do that.
We don't define historic places.
Well, I think actually we do. We've made a decision to use the federal legislation and the state legislation, and we've been instructed to think about doing those things, but we haven't been mandated to do that. And I think it's a fabulous start. You wouldn't start anywhere else. And Jack, you could be right, but I think I'd solicit that input if there are an incremental 500 sites. You know, we won't get it done by January 1st. If it's a lesser number, we might have a shot at it. So I'd certainly be soliciting it, and I'd also be soliciting from folks who want to tell us that for our purposes, in terms of doing the things we're attempting to do, some of your 597 things just aren't appropriately there.
Let's see how this unfolds, and if we end up with two lists, we're asking for that's one thing, and if we end up with 30 through this process, that's something else. Let me ask a question, my understanding of this. So we're listing sites that are already on lists, or we're referencing like
we've recognized them.
And does our recognizing them in the Highlands plan give them increased protection from what they have now by virtue of being on the list? Or we're just
fulfilling our obligation.
Yeah. So we're just keeping the status quo. I mean,
historic structures are not down all the time.
Yes.
The site.
If a municipality adopts the standards that are intended to protect the resource, then any resource contained in that list is subject to the review under those standards.
Or what about the preservation area?
In the preservation area, they're already protected by reference to the DEP rules. Those standards.
Including them in the plan, give them any added protection.
In the planning area, gives them added protection.
Not in the preservation area.
Correct.
Now, I just wanted to comment that, you know, I think Michael and Tim both implied that we should be making an effort to allow the public to add or subtract from our lists, either the endangered species or historic places or whatever. There will be other issues where we will say we wish the public could have input as well before we get to the final vote on this. And the local participation committee, which met just before this meeting, we are trying to find as many ways and venues to allow the public to view the plan, to seek questions, to offer input to us. So we spent, you know, an hour and a half discussing different ways that we could accomplish that, given the fact that we're not going to have a lot of time to do it in.
I think the major difference, though, is where in the process it happens. I think what Michael was saying, and I agree with his sentiment, and I'm sure Kurt, if he was here, he'd applaud it, too. You're trying to carve out right now people that should not be encumbered by it. Tim realizes that there are going to be those people existing, but I believe he feels it would be after January 1 that that process, we'd be just, he'd be formatting the process, and that's how we'd move forward. Because I don't think we, again, I'll say, I don't think we have the luxury to, I don't want to act cursory and just quickly look at these people. I think it needs more than that, but I don't think we have time to do more than that right now.
Okay, let's move on to, you're still making your presentation, right?
Yeah, but I have to ask a question. Chris made a statement about the federal and state lists supersede ours. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Those supersede. I would say that they are already existing regulations that exist at the state and federal level for historic sites that have been identified in accordance with that definition. And there's already a state and federal framework and regulations for addressing historic sites for Department of Transportation and for redevelopment and for other issues regarding historic sites. And those are in place now and will continue to be in place. What we're suggesting is that the Highlands recognize a Highlands Historic and Cultural Resource List, and that that list be inclusive of state and federal designated existing historic and cultural resources.
As a baseline.
As a baseline, and provide opportunity through a resource proposal process or a nomination process, where which applicants would know what we're asking of them.
Okay.
And we would know what to check for, and they would be given clear guidelines for that.
My question is, though, we can't, that doesn't mean, to Tim's point, they're knocked down all the time. I mean, it may be, I mean, it's not as though we could, if for some reason we would choose to remove something from that list. We really shouldn't do that because federal law supersedes.
There's no preemption, no.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
we would want to, but understanding what you meant by supersede, because right. Sometimes it means our hands are tied, you know, with the end.
Well, we don't have the power to remove a site from the list.
No.
From our list.
From our list.
From our list. I think it's important.
Just using it as a basic line.
What you will notice throughout many elements, at a minimum, in the interest of providing consistent direction and clarity to affected, whether it be a property owner, a development interest, or a municipality that's trying to apply the rules, we've always, at a minimum, adopted at least as an appropriate standard that's consistent with existing law. So we've tried to avoid creating a situation where our standard is inconsistent with another regulatory standard. And this would be one case.
Well, but there's a difference. What's that? I think that's the key question, because if there are things listed in here that are references to rules as opposed to laws, rules in DEP, the Highland rules, where if we disagree with those rules from any direction, we adopt a policy that's different from those regulations, then we get into harmonizing, because there is, the law requires consistency out there. Whereas for things like other laws, then the star site law, that doesn't happen.
Yep.
Just be adopted. Let me ask a question that I got confused by your answer. If we adopt this kind of policy for the Highlands, including in the preservation area, municipalities are required to bring their ordinances into compliance with them. So if our policy says you can't knock down historic structures without public approval, then that would affect, that would give more protection to those sites in the preservation area. Is that right?
And that's the way it's already written in the DEP rules, that if there is something on the state or national register, they are protected. You cannot degrade it more than minimally. And you have to prove that.
Yes, but I think the question in my mind, too, going from what you're saying is, however, if we develop a nomination process, and we are required under the Act to do something to protect historic and other historic resources and sites, you've given the citation here, if we develop a nomination process and new things are put on in the preservation or the planning area, they would get extra protection.
Yes,
from us.
Yes, yes. And, right.
And those are the things that Tim is referencing. They knock them down all the time. You see an old house. If they didn't go through the procedure of being on a federal or state list, but if we recognize them, even if they're not on the federal or state list, through our own nomination process,
And we add them to our list, then they have more protection than they do today.
And also that would be part of the whole conformance process where they would have more protection from that individual town as well. So that as we go through and the town is looking at whether or not they are in conformance, if they had standards or guidelines or protections for their own locally historic properties, that would be in conformance with our policies.
That makes sense.
What percentage are privately owned properties? The great majority are publicly owned.
So on historic, I would say the great majority is privately owned.
Particularly the locally historic ones. I mean, you have all the structures that are architecturally historic.
Designated by the federal government?
Not necessarily.
Well, that's designated. The whole distinction.
We have two levels. We have the one level is the designation that comes through the state and national register nomination, and there's a very elaborate process you go through.
Right.
But we're proposing that there are some...
But most private homeowners, don't they go to every extreme to stay out of that designation?
Yeah.
Well, then, but there are benefits to being designated as well, because there are tax dollars and incentives and things like that. But we're looking at historic sites, properties, whatever, as a resource that's not just worth protecting, but also gives you value. And that sort of goes to the other elements that we're looking at. The standards that a municipality might adopt would really be taking advantage of and capitalizing on the historic structures they have in their town, that it wouldn't be a disbenefit, it would actually be a benefit. Because that's what we're trying to develop. So that there'd be these locally historic ones, that some of them are architectural, some of them are significant just in local history, that the towns would be recognizing that. And it's something that they've been trying to achieve anyway, and we would just be adding to their empowerment.
They might as well do it now.
Exactly.
A lot of historic sites are in disrepair.
Yes, true.
Are we going to provide grant monies? Is that something that we may consider
up to you
going forward? If we want somebody to keep a historic place that is in jeopardy, we have to be prepared to help them.
We're charged with determining overall policies required to maintain and enhance such resources, including cultural and historic resources. So the answer is we could do that, at least as a suggested policy to the world.
Is that in here anywhere? What Michael just said is a suggested policy.
That could certainly be interpreted from, but it's not specific.
Right.
No.
Should it be included at this point?
Well, I think it's a freebie to me.
The question is, it implies that we have the money to do it, to give grants, which we could decide to.
No, I think I read this legislation, John, as saying overall policies that the state could adopt or anybody else could adopt, and we're not there to implement them. We're just there to determine which ones would make sense.
We don't identify them and have a plan, we never will get funding.
Are grants that the state gives out.
It does say coordinate with the Historic Preservation Trust and coordinate with consistency and to ensure a stable source of funding for preservation and stewardship of historic and cultural resources. And coordination and consistency. Top of page 5, first bullet.
Basically, what Governor Corzine referred to today, the Garden State Preservation Trust, includes the Historic Preservation Trust dollars. And, prioritizing historic sites within the plan should prioritization for state dollars.
Why don't you try to go through the whole paper?
The initial is very similar to where we were with significant natural.
What page?
Starting from page 1 on the policy paper. Is the inventory shall be established and maintained. We currently have the inventory with the baseline from SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Office, and it would be augmented to be more comprehensive and include additional historic and cultural resources. That inventory would be supported by the policy in 2, which is what we're referring to as the nomination process. The term nomination, particularly with historic and cultural, is used as the state term for SHPO, so we may want to use another term not to confuse people. A resource protection nomination process or a resource proposal process. Something that doesn't misconstrue that you're getting in on the state and federal program, but you're on the Highlands program. A language issue. That would be that process, very similar to what we've been talking about throughout this for significant natural, to maintain that approach for historic and cultural. The third policy is to encourage, and this is not a required element, but to encourage
the establishment of a local historic preservation commission or similar entity, to have local governments define an entity that could review development, redevelopment, and historic and cultural resources for the community. And that is so that we can support them with our list and support them with our regional programs, but that someone locally is keeping an eye on things and understands where their importance is for the region and locally. We then move into resource protection standards, policy 4, which would be sort of this, would come into play by mandating that conformance require a historic preservation element, which is one of the non-required elements under the MLUL for master plans, and that we would require that a historic preservation element be implemented. That would be a way for communities to capture this inventory, recognize the Highlands inventory and process, and allow for resource protection standards to be implemented through the historic element and standards and ordinances that support it. So we would like it to, at minimum, at this point in time, the framework include historic and cultural resource protection standards to address the issue of teardowns, encourage sensitive adaptive reuse, and consider historic transportation structures, as well as guidelines for municipal historic preservation initiatives. And they are some of the framework for which the resource protection standards would be supported with in this historic element of the master plan. So one of the decisions there is to make that a mandatory requirement of conformance is a historic preservation element.
I have a question on the language. Like, take, for instance, the second to the last one under number 4, consider historic transport. How many fantastic old bridges there are, and how often the county comes in with this ugly, huge, you know, engineering.
No context sensitive design was considered.
Now, when we're saying consider, are we saying that the town then is going to need to consider the value? I mean, what's the teeth in this? How does it work?
That's sort of where I think we're looking for guidance on how far you want to go and things you want to address in these policy guidance when you provide them. And we used language that I would consider would be, you know, I think not as stringent as, you know, define historic transportation structures, identify and protect. Encourage is certainly a word, you know, so that language is where you were looking for guidance from you on how you want this element to be framed and the details that you would like and the language supporting them.
I'll make a suggestion to that point, which might help. And I'm going to use as an example Morris County, which is far and away the leading county in the state of New Jersey. The county, of course, does all the bridges. And the county fixes bridges, repairs them, and does them to state standards, which are clearly established. Some municipalities with a great sense of history want to include exactly what we're talking about here in the redesign or repair of certain bridges. And the county of Morris has been very accommodating in dealing with, when there is one, a historic preservation committee or commission in a municipality that makes recommendations. They sit down with the county bridge engineer. They work up designs that are satisfactory to the municipality and to the state requirements, and they complete the bridge, and everybody goes away applauding. This happens a lot in Morris County because Morris County, again, has determined that there are a lot of historic bridges, and there are a lot of places where the interest in history and preservation is very strong, and the county wants to accommodate that among its municipalities. It's an encouraging way to do it because you have no other way to do it. You cannot mandate that the county do certain things in certain ways regarding bridges or almost anything else except through strong encouragement. Morris County has been very accommodating in that respect. So that may be a good way to continue with the language that you already have, but a way to achieve the desired goal.
I'd just like to add to that.
in addition to the county fixing our bridges and making them historically compatible with historic areas, and they did it in Persephone, but also the state has been very good about it. They've replaced two bridges in Morris County, and the one in particular, the towns that were surrounding it, we told them that this had been a historic bridge, and we expected them to incorporate some architectural elements into the new bridge that would reflect that, and they did, and it was great. So sometimes you just have to ask.
I'm just thinking about wording here, and not just wordsmithing, but trying to make it a little stronger. Like maybe instead of consider, to say something like recognize and protect the nature of historic. I mean, the reason I say that is I hear what you're saying, and that doesn't throw out working together. But many times it's really the nature of the bridge. I mean, perhaps it's impossible to maintain a one-way bridge at that location for some reason. Still, the nature of that bridge, through considering what the historic significance was and how it was built, the type of stone, all of that, could be maintained even if there needs to be some changes. But I also know many instances where a one-way bridge was taken out for no good reason, and it was actually a nice, traffic calming. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to it that were lost then, and so I just think we need to put a little more of a stop sign there than consider.
My concern, though, still is, we're charged with creating a regional master plan that has a resource assessment that includes an assessment of cultural and historic resources. And I understand that we're taking this list of 597, but that already exists, and the right thing to do is step one. But I think we are told to go out and practically find the rest of the stuff in answer to the question about federal preservation. Most of that, if not all of it's voluntary, mm-hmm. getting on lists. And I just think we ought to be trying sooner rather than later, and pre-January 1st, to find out everything else. These wonderful bridges that people are talking about, they may or may not be on this list of 597. And if they're not, Jack, it sounds like there'd be agreement amongst a number of people that whatever bridge it was you're talking about, if it's not on the list, it ought to be. And I'd sure like to do that pre-January 1st.
I don't know that it's as a practical matter we could actually do that, given the nature of the investigation that has to be done, and the confirmation of what we've discovered, and establishing conformance with the standards that are in place. Not to mention what other state requirements might be there. But it's something that certainly could be done post facto.
Well, I don't think we need to worry about the standards per se. We're going to have standards going down the road for post January 1st. But if there are things that clearly ought to be on this list, we, the staff, and the public, and we ought to be working together to get them there sooner rather than later.
I think we have been doing that, Michael. We have been gathering information, and we do have an inventory beyond that. The decision is what makes it to the final list and that official process and what a municipality would recognize and what the council would recognize. So we certainly haven't, I don't want to be perceived as we've been limited in taking in any information. We've gathered as much information as we have, and we have many, many file drawers of it and compiled it. But I'm not so sure that it is the Highlands Historic Resource List and that it's been comprehensive enough for us to adopt at this point in time, but consider it moving forward.
Can you
absolutely
share it with us, with the council members?
The status of the information that we can, as a staff, recommend to the council is valid for consideration of the master plan is what's been presented to date. There's a vast amount of information that's out there for which we would have to go through a review and a deliberate approval process, recommend to the council to approve in the list. What we do want to avoid, I think, to some extent, is inadvertently including resources that may not meet a minimum standard for designation of historic only because somebody believes, well, I think Jack made the example, somebody believes that they're, it's old. Secondly, is the recognition that...
But wait a second. If you go back to the standards that exist for these 597, I'm vaguely familiar with the federal requirements. I don't think those requirements are all that dramatic. So you're going to end up, I think you're going to end up with stuff that's not on the list that clearly should be, and stuff on the list that people shrug their shoulders about and say, okay, great, it's on the list, but it's not that big a deal.
I don't know what, I mean, this, you hear the point.
Yes.
It's up here, so you guys should think about it, and we should talk about it.
We can.
More when
one thing we can consider is a Highlands list and the nomination list. So to address Michael's concern, that we capture things that have been nominated, not necessarily act upon them, because then we'd have a deliberative process to go through and see if they really qualify.
Oh, so you mean have a nomination list in the plan?
Or through the public process, so that through January 1 we'd have additional nominations, so that there would at least be an inventory of additional nominees, but not necessarily being approved on the list.
It could be an addendum.
Right.
Okay.
I'd like to just add, John, that I think we do need to be careful to balance the fact that we've spent a lot of time talking about nice-looking bridges, and I love a stone bridge as much as anybody, but we are charged with promoting a sound, balanced transportation system that is consistent with smart growth strategies and principles and which preserves mobility in the Highlands region. So I do think we need to be cognizant of the fact that there's going to be places where, you know, we've got to make improvements and we have to invest in improvements, and it may not look as pretty as the old one, but it's what we need to do. I just want to not lose track that we do have several charges in here.
I'd just like to add something. The DOT has a process and a philosophy. It's called context-sensitive design. And I really bought into it with them. And they're very much committed to, when they're doing a public project, of making sure that it fits in with the context of the area and the community around it, which is why they were willing to do that bridge so beautifully, and why they built, you know, the most beautiful parking lot, because we wanted them to in Persippany. So, you know, the state is already moving in that way, and I think we just need to put into the plan the fact that we should, you know, make sure that the state follows through with that context and design standards.
Well, I'm not so sanguine about the status quo in DOT's approach to things, or the counties and the municipalities. And I guess the question I would like the staff to address is, in places that are less enlightened than Morris County, you know, how do you ensure that these resources get protected? Because I think, you know, the purpose of what we ought to be doing is not simply articulating somebody else's list, and maybe there's some value in doing that for clarity, but, you know, if anyone wants to dispute that there are legitimate, valuable historic cultural resources that are lost because they're not considered and because the balancing doesn't happen. Balancing implies that you actually consider the other side of the equation, not just say, we want the road to be quicker, we want to straighten the curve out. And I think that ought to be the goal of our work here, is that where's a gap where there are legitimate historic resources that are not being protected under current approaches. And we have the authority to protect them, and that's what the policy that ought to be in the RIP is. And I don't hear that necessarily conclusion that we're going to be doing that through this. And I don't think the language of encourage or consider gets us there. So that's my challenge to the staff in terms of trying to respond to that.
Why don't you go through the policies? Some of the questions we asked, a few get answered by subsequent policies.
Yes. The pre-conformance, page 3, item 5, strategies are that period post-adoption where we are going to develop the nomination protocols and criteria and map submission requirements. So we have to have some process for which individuals understand what nomination is and clear guidelines for how to do it. And a process by which the council can act on. We also would like to work on historic and cultural protection criteria and ordinances and design standards and add definition to the framework that we're proposing to the plan, and maintain or gather existing inventories of historic, cultural, and resources from municipalities, counties, and local historic preservation groups. So that is a continuing, ongoing opportunity for us to hear from others about what we have known to us from LIST or what they consider to be important to them locally or at state levels.
That's exactly what we were discussing and what was raised here. So I think it's important now to recognize that if we go through each of these presentations in its entirety, we might find the answers to questions that we've already held in our heads and might not be compelled to ask.
Not that we didn't all read them very carefully before the meeting. But
moving on to six, which are the conformance strategies, that is a process for which counties, municipals, and stakeholders would nominate the site, knowing these guidelines and knowing what the protocol is as part of the conformance process. The staff would assist these counties and municipalities by applying it, providing them with information and sources for historic and cultural data. And it can be done in a number of ways for local engagement, for either surveying sites or providing an inventory that includes, you know, local questionnaires or local input. So this is an opportunity where we can assist them in doing that. It's sort of, here's what we know about you. Here's everything we know about you that we know about your municipality when you come into conformance. You should know what we expect of you during that process, and you should know the guidelines by which we're going to evaluate you for. And that you are better able to come to that process because you know what we know about you and you know what we expect of you. And that is what we're striving for. Again, let me just mention that the historic preservation element would be an integral part and that would be a required element for plan conformance. I think that would provide an opportunity for those towns that aren't doing as well as others to gather that inventory, to recognize it at the local level, and to lift it to a regional level for recognition. And by making that a mandatory part of plan conformance, we can better capture those sites and have a more comprehensive list where we're on more of the same page regionally than not. Number seven, five-year resource protection and planning goals are recommended in furtherance. We'd like to continue the recognition of these resource protection needs in support of the RNP, incorporate the data into other, incorporate data from other databases into our inventory as appropriate, and develop indicators as an assessment tool. Are we doing well? Is what the RNP suggested as guidelines and standards and protocols, is it working? And so we'd like to make sure that we're assessing
this. Is this for the towns or for us?
This is for the
council.
The coordination and consistency considerations are, again, to promote implementation among state and federal agencies. So we'd like a region-wide historic and cultural inventory that can serve as a consistent database and a resource for other agencies to use when they make decisions about permits or applications. And coordinate with the trust, as I mentioned previously on the top of page five, for a stable funding source. We want to establish and implement a signage program which works along DOTs and other entities for significant natural and historic resources and landmarks. There's a current program in place. We'd also like to coordinate with DOP to ensure that the HPAAs, the Highlands Preservation Area approvals, require review and evaluation of historic resources and assist them in our understanding of those and their understanding. So ultimately, it's to coordinate with other agencies for protection of permitting actions, state and federal actions in accordance with the RMP.
Chris, to that last point, so is it your understanding that the DEP rules you quoted from earlier do not require the review and evaluation of historic resources in Highlands Area determinations or applications?
They do.
So then, what exactly, to what end are we coordinating to ensure?
We would make sure that they knew the list that we had approved as Highlands Resources. And so I think it's just a matter of we're all on the same page, so that if an applicant came in, they could know that a site has been designated in that area or a site has been designated for that region. It would be, I think, just a dual shared database.
Okay.
Plus, we would have our own updates.
That makes sense to me, that if we're collecting and developing a list on an ongoing basis, then we would want to make that list available, particularly from use. Just, you know, it's maybe, you know, it's embedded in that statement. That statement doesn't say much to me at all. What you just said, though, has some value.
have a shared database for historic resources. Number nine, local participation considerations, assist municipal and county entities to gather this historic and cultural, and as part of plan conformance, we would be able to assist them to put together that historic element, preservation element. Include tourism professionals for their opinions of potential sites for historic and cultural resource significant, and support ecotourism and opportunities for economic development, because I think we all know that our historic resources are great for community character and provide a great legacy for why the Highlands is so special to us in many ways. And develop a coordinated interpretive system for historic and cultural resources in the region, so that as people come through the region, they can know where historic sites are, whether they be on a bike ride or a visit to a farm tour or wherever throughout the region. And to provide development or redevelopment of specially planned areas. Please note that specially planned areas are the term that we're using in the glossary for areas of redevelopment throughout the Highlands region, so as not to confuse terminology. These are specially planned areas. And that in those areas, which typically may be in our older historic boroughs or older historic industrial sites, to make sure that we recognize the need to review them and do a historic survey and abide by guidelines and demonstrate minimal practicable degradation, as the Act asked us to do. They are the nine policy considerations that we would like for historic and cultural resources.
Other comments or questions?
I have a question. In page three, when talking about the pre-conformance strategies,
mm-hmm.
in developing the historic and cultural resource nomination program, can you do that in-house? Or you have the expertise to do that in-house?
I believe we do. And I believe we've relied on others who have a similar process, and we'll use them for support and guidelines.
In terms of the second bullet point, the criteria, is that going to be based pretty much on what others do now in terms of the criteria? Is there criteria you can use? Or
there are great, the New Jersey has criteria, and the state, the federal program has criteria. So I think there are great resources for that. It's a matter of selecting out of that what we would like to be as part of the Highlands program.
You think there's some things unique to the Highlands that
we may not want to just totally encompass it, but we may want to take it and nuance it a bit for the region.
I have a question. To what degree have we gotten any input to this aspect of the plan from SHPO or any private?
Actually, a great deal. I've had a number of conversations with the folks from SHPO, and they support the sort of thing we're going after. They recognize that the limitations of the State and National Register are real, that you have to meet that nomination process, but they also recognize that there are other historic and cultural resources that are more of local significance, and they would like themselves to ultimately one day get to those kinds of inventories, and they've expressed an interest in working with us on that.
Thank you.
Steve, who's preparing the transportation component of the regional master plan?
Can I say we are?
Sure, you can say whatever you want.
We have a consultant that is assisting, DOT is providing support, and Chris's shop is leading the effort.
Which we'll see in a couple of weeks, I trust?
Yes. It is guiding principles, no policies per se. So we want to introduce it as a policy work session, but as an element when we introduce the draft plan. That makes.
So are you saying the first time we would see it would be when we see the whole, essentially the whole draft plan?
Or components as of the plan as they are prepared. And in October, the hope is we're going to incrementally start working through each of the individual components as they are ready, and then there would be a component which includes transportation.
And I sense, as with other issues, there are some members, or at least one, who would want to be involved in reviewing that as early as it was available.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In terms of terminology, I think it's called special planned area in other documents, not to be nitpicking, but I noticed it because I thought it was a new term,
And I think it should be put in the glossary, and we should understand better, because actually I was a little concerned when I saw it in one of the other papers, because I didn't know what it was.
We're
going to go with specially
planned. But it's called
special.
The syntax was debated amongst staff, and we're going with specially planned errors.
Which one? Specially.
Specially.
Okay.
It's a change between Monday and Wednesday.
Yeah. It's an iterative process.
But that is the glossary in whatever
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. I think that the glossary update for all of these items as we move through is imperative that we keep track of that.
We ready to move on to scenic resources?
And just one last suggestion, that is that in 9 on page 5, I'm still concerned I don't hear a lot of standards for all the process. Let's presume that the inventory work that's done and everything else. And the standard that I would offer you better consider this minimal practical degradation of historic and archaeological properties has been achieved. It sounds like a standard that can be applied both to individual properties as well as the plans that were developed for special planning areas or anything else. I think we need to make a statement about what the benchmark is for all this process.
And that term comes from that.
It's your satellite.
So. I was just going to add that it seemed like in 9 we finally, in one of the last bullets, hit on ecotourism initiatives. And I would say that, you know, the underpinning of everything we do is going to be funding. And if we can find a way to preserve historical buildings and components and areas through self-funding because they're a component of ecotourism or tourism period, I really think we need to seek that, and maybe it shouldn't be all the way down in one of the final bullets. Because,
you know, I would agree with that.
One of the points you touched on here at the end, the specially planned areas, quickly say, I would love to see you break that out. I think you're conflating two things again that I may misapprehend, and that there's a great reason for doing it, but we have this brownfield obligation, and we've got a historical and cultural obligation. I leave those two things separated and not have them in one thing. Is there a reason for putting them together this way?
The particularly because a lot of the older barrows and a lot of the historic or cultural sites may have been previously industrial sites or sites that are contaminated.
The ones on our list of 597.
I haven't evaluated those for contamination, but some of them could be.
I'll bet a nickel they're not. I mean, if you've got a site like that, your chances of getting on a federal register, I think, are pretty slim.
We have a lot of mines and a lot of other things that
anyway,
come up in
historical. Well, anyway, I throw it out to you for consideration that separating these two directives may be a sensible way to go.
Move on to
safety
resources.
As we do that, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to read a line from page 4 of the document that you were just reviewing. The Highlands Act requires the Highlands Council to periodically revise and update the regional master plan at least once every 6 years, so we think that we're going to be finished with this. And we can all go home.
I thought you were reading a line that said periodically was redundant.
No.
Can I ask a question before we start this, Steve? I should have thought of it when we were dealing with significant natural areas. Do you have an overlay for scenic resource areas, for instance, that you can just pop on the screen, just so we have an idea for how vast or not vast an area we're talking about, and that connects to the recommendations?
We are not intending on proposing scenic resources for inclusion in this plan at this time. But because of the difficulty, the sensitivity, and somewhat the subjectivity of individual scenic resources, that what we're proposing is a nomination process so that we can go through a specific and deliberate review of each nomination based upon local interest, and that the council then would review and approve each one individually. Scenic is very aesthetic orientated. It's somewhat subjective, much less objective than some of the other resource information, and we felt that that was the best approach. So we do not.
What man's art?
Yes, exactly.
And I would like to suggest that you approach that in a diametrically different way.
we're charged, this is what we're charged with doing. It's what I thought we were doing over the course, in part, over the course of the last 18 months. And I, do you have a list of scenic areas that you've considered?
I think Steve just said no, but why don't you go through the scenic policies?
He doesn't have one to propose, I know, but I'm asking a different question just about what we've been up to. Let me pretend I'm a newspaper reporter. What have you guys been doing about scenic areas? You're charged with scenic areas. It's there in 11A1 or whatever it is. I'm just asking. Have you done anything about scenic areas?
Why don't you go through the paper and then we'll see. May not answer your question. They've got an 8-page paper here that's headed scenic areas.
And I think Chris and Mary Jude can summarize that.
We do have a variety of information gathered on scenic resources. The idea is to not use them as the list to serve as a baseline in this case, because scenic resources are not defined in the Act, specifically in the language they're referred to in the Act, but there isn't a definition provided for them. They're referred to in Section 10b-3 and 10c-3. The DEP rules recognize scenic at 738.312c, and they are recognized along with historic and cultural. However, scenic differ in that, in accordance with our language in the paper, on technical basis, page 7, we've stated that identifying them is not a simple task. There's no single database for the information, and that the physical limits are not easily defined, as is the case with many view sheds where many vantage points can provide a variety of scenic vistas and aesthetic values. We have researched many resources to come up with an approach that we think the council can use through a nomination process that can help identify and delineate scenic resources that can be resources of the Highlands region, we'll call them Highlands Scenic Resources, so that individuals can clearly understand what's the Highlands definition of a scenic resource, how it is delineated, and how it is going to be defined and protected in the plan. These areas span many miles in some instances, and in some instances they could be, you know, an individual location. And therefore, to use or someone else's list that's just not as practical as it is for the historic or cultural resources or for those identified by DEP as significant natural areas.
Are there other lists if we want to use them?
I understand, I know there aren't
laws the same way there are, but are there lists that other...
Municipal master plans sometimes recognize them, county plans recognize them, nonprofit groups recognize them, rivers recognize them,
DOT, transportation
recognizes them. We've listed the variety of sources that could serve and which we've gathered information on as a potential list. However, without a without a definition and a process, are we using DOT's definition? Are we using Morris County's definition? Are we using Warren County's definition? Are we using the Route 57 button? There are many ways to go about this. We've suggested in the glossary a definition for scenic resource areas on page 8, and proposed an approach that used scenic resource protection areas that would be areas that protect and surround scenic resources. And that's an approach that we're proposing with a definition that includes the definition you see, as well as the DEP reference from 312. That really gets us through 1 and 2 on this policy proposal paper. Following the similar process, significant natural, historic and cultural, and scenic, although their context may be different where they start out, the process or protocols are following a similar procedure. The resource protection standards that the RMP would have for Highlands Scenic Resources would restrict development and new land uses that impact or deter from scenic resource protection areas, require inclusion of scenic resource area protection standards within municipal zoning and land use ordinances, and support protection through regulations that prohibit billboards, limit height, address massing, a variety of instances which we've researched may be appropriate. Minimum requirements for incorporation of scenic resources at the master plan level
in your conservation and open space elements and county plans.
Question. Then these standards that you have listed here, such as prohibiting billboards, that would be a standard that would be in the plan?
For scenic resource protections area.
Okay, so if a town, when during the conformance process, a town would need to then adopt through its municipal zoning regulations that
those
standard.
Right, as appropriate for that scenic resource area.
Okay.
That doesn't exist. Again, on March 30th of 2007, we're not going to be protecting scenic resources. We're going to be protecting them sometime in the future when we figure out what a scenic, which scenic resources ought to be part of the regional master plan.
As part of the conformance process.
I was unfair because we might decide that on January 27th, but I'll bet a nickel we don't. And actually, if you think there's a chance we do it on January 27th, let's do it by January 1st. You know, we're charged with protecting scenic resources. We haven't identified them. We're charged with identifying them. We're charged with maintaining and enhancing.
Is what you're saying in Policy 3 that if a municipality came into for conformance planning area or a municipality had to come in for conformance preservation area, among the things we would, this policy would say had to be in their plan was scenic resources protection through these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when there was a public hearing on that, on our, whether on their application to have their municipality deemed in compliance with the Highlands Plan, that among the things that would be on the table was what they're saying about scenic resources and whether they've included too much or too little. Right? Is that right?
Yes.
So that would be the way, I understand, that the scenic resource database would be compiled or legislated through this.
Based heavily on local involvement and input, yes.
So you wouldn't necessarily have had to identify those areas, is the point. You would need to just have the standards in place for when there's a change in land use, you would then apply that standard?
And any time there was a scenic resource that was inventoried, nominated, approved by council, would be included by reference and subject to those standards that would be incorporated as a requirement of conformance. Yes.
So would the area have to be identified before the standard would be applied?
No.
Okay.
So, Michael, are you suggesting we're not complying with the Act with this?
Yes. I mean, it's straightforward. We're supposed to figure out what scenic areas there are. Does anybody disagree with that? Maybe I've misread it, but, you know, it's that section 11, the same thing the cultural and historical stuff came from.
No, you're right.
I think the dilemma here is that there are many definitions, and we have to decide, and we can do this, by the way. We can choose one or more or some composite of definitions and create a Highlands definition and abide by that and use that as the standard.
We could do that, or we could choose some scenic resources that we ought to protect by January 1st, so that on March 30th, if somebody wants to do something that will degrade them, they would be kept from doing that by virtue of some standards that we put in place.
Well, that's the point. I think we need to establish those standards. Even if you make a nomination of a particular scenic area, why would we do that? It has to conform to certain criteria that we've established.
No, I'm talking about different standards, Jack. There's a standard for what makes something a scenic resource, and then a standard of how you treat it. And we haven't created any scenic resources. Look, if I was criticizing us, I'd say, again, you know, 18 months, there are lots of scenic resources in the Highlands area. You guys couldn't come up with three?
I think what they're doing is, what they're proposing is that our plan has a process for designating. That's different than having a list of them. And that's essentially the same thing that point you've been making on all three policies so far, and it's, I think, the answer they're providing on each policy.
No, I don't. I think this is the stinker. I may not understand, John. I think you're saying municipality comes in and says, well, geez, we don't know what the scenic areas are either around us, but we think we ought to treat them this way if we ever find any. I mean, let's suppose I'm a municipality in the preservation area. You guys haven't even told me what the scenic resource is that I'm to be protecting. How can you charge me with creating, you know, bringing my own master plan into conformance?
Well, we have a definition for it, Michael, and if we read through the definition, one could argue the whole region is scenic. And well, we could designate the region as scenic, and we could work backwards. So, it's a bit subjective when you start talking about a view shed.
I understand it's subjective, but I would have thought that whatever subjective and objective criteria we want to bring to bear, that we bring those criteria to bear over the course of the next 3.5 months and pick a few scenic resources anyway.
Ultimately, we have to make the decision, because if we put in place a nomination process, they're still going to come to us, and we're going to have to decide what comprises a scenic site. So, I mean, do we do it now, or do we do it 5 months from now? And I concur. Let's just do it. Do cows in a pasture constitute a scenic, vista?
No panoramic cows.
Two or more.
Not the cows, but the barn might.
So, I mean, you really need to really come to a Highlands definition of what that is and what that process will be.
This may be the most subjective issue we're going to deal with. It is incredibly difficult to get universal agreement on what is and isn't a scenic resource. So to think that we're going to do this through the Highlands region, I think is that's just not going to happen. We need a process to do it, to address the requirement of the act, and because it's the right thing to do. But I don't see how we can do it in advance on a site-by-site basis.
Well, and I think there's an important distinction, and this goes to the preservation area planning issue, is that there is an opportunity for, as soon as you identify a scenic resource in the preservation area, they will be protected by the DEP permitting process. So they have already delineated some in the preservation area, and any ones that you identify will automatically be preserved through that. To say that in a planning area this will be automatically protected, I think is a mistake in terms of understanding, because all of these provisions require that they be adopted at the local level through ordinances. So there will be a period of time that resources will be in jeopardy in the planning area until towns conform.
Okay. Just on that point, I want to keep coming back to this. The local conformity is not the only tool available to implement the RMA.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So let's not talk about it that way. And if we talk about who ought to conform, if we ever decide what constitutes significant, DOT is the biggest authorizer of billboards on the state's highways. So, when you drive up towards Route 23 in Butler and Wanacue there, DOT is the one that's put all the those. So that's not addressed in here either. I agree. I think that we ought to take a shot at defining it. It is absolutely subjective, but it's not as if it hasn't been done before. Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket, the Hudson Valley Greenway. There are plenty of programs out there, the Adirondack Park, which define how to protect, how to identify and protect scenic areas. I also think there's probably an initial list that we could look to for primarily the Appalachian Trail, public resource areas, ones that are listed here already that we want to incorporate and at least take a crack at. And then, I do think there's some logic in this idea of nomination and defining it as we go forward, but I would be very uncomfortable having a plan that didn't have some initial list of areas that ought to be considered and protected.
For as examples, you mean, Tim? Just as examples of what you consider?
Well, are we going to argue, will we argue that we would not want to protect the scenic values of the views from the Appalachian Trail as it runs through the Highlands region? Does anybody disagree with that? So if you don't disagree with that policy, then it's incumbent upon us to take some steps to do that. We know where the resource is.
Then we just have to define what is beauty.
Right, and that's why I say if you go back to and you look at some of these other places that have tried to do this, buildings along the edges of ridgelines, on the tops of ridgelines, that great structure there in Morris County that you see off the 287.
It's in Parsippany.
It's in Parsippany. That was really enlightening. I understand that.
My enlightenment. So,
those criteria are out there and have a track record. They're not, it is subjective, we need to make a decision on it, but it's not
undoable.
Your comment about the billboards and that this isn't the only mechanism, are you suggesting we do something other than simply define the scenic vistas? You suggested we do something with other agencies?
I suggest that in those resource areas, not only should we work towards municipal conformity with a standard that says you can't significantly degrade the scenic values, however we define that standard apply to state agencies as well as municipalities. That's the point that keeps getting lost.
Well, we try to capture that in number 8. And if we want to add additional policies in that, that's where we're trying to capture those issues. So we'd be glad to address that. The consistency and coordination process is intended to capture coordination with state agencies. And we want to augment that. That's where we should augment it now.
Well, I thought the language, you know, the language in 3, I mean, again, we'll work the language on later on. I just wanted to point out that there are actions of the state agencies that ought to be brought into conformity with this plan. And that concept, that policy, seems to drop out of this a little bit. And billboards is just billboards. So.
I think that, you know, there's something, number 4 sort of popped in the middle here. You know, we talk about design standards in the middle of what looks pretty. And it seems to me that it's sort of a separate issue almost. And either we need to decide, yes, we're going to endorse design standards and here's what they are, or we're not, because, you know, it's meaningless if we don't. Either we're going to tell everybody that they got to have red stucco roofs, or we're not. We're going to say they're asphalt roofs or they're not, or they're cedar shaped or they're not. But it seems to me either we're going to do it or we don't do it. I mean, there's no sense dancing around it.
Well, I think there were for the other papers we've reviewed so far, there were headings in bold that didn't make it in here that partly answer what you're saying, because they go. The earlier ones, the other ones go through policies, and then smart design is almost a separate subheading of the paper in terms of. I read it as that's how we would review new developments. If they weren't going to destroy a scenic vista, we would still be concerned about their scenic impact and want to protect, limit any degradation through smart design standards.
Does something kick it in beyond just new development? Is it something if there's more than a 50% renovation of an existing structure? I mean, that always kicks in current BOCA standards. I mean, does the same thing happen with these standards? You know, is there a point where the renovation of a structure throws in the Highlands design standards, the architectural design standards? You know, I mean, it goes beyond here, and it talks about this, you know, street signs. You know, are we going to tell a town that if you want to be a part of the master, if you want to be a part of the master plan, you've got to agree to put up green signs with yellow lettering, look like John Deere tractors? You know, but I mean, you know, this is what's in here, so I think, you know, we need to decide. Yes, we're going to endorse a standard street sign, or we're not. We're going to leave it up to them. Or we're going to say they got to be cast iron, they can't be plastic, and they can't be, or they have to have 911 size letters, or they don't. That's.
You know, I'd like
Bill
to make a comment. I think that we might have some legal problems with this. You know, let's say that a municipality says, ooh, we've got a scenic vista here and one over here, and they upgrade their master plan and their zoning and essentially downsize the density that was allowed there so they can protect this scenic vista. And then the owners of this property challenge it in court, and the judge says, well, what's a scenic vista? And you have to try to prove that it is. It could be very difficult legally.
Yeah, and I think that's the nature. I think John alluded to before. This is the most objective of all the resource issues in the act.
I don't know how long it will hold up in court.
Well, I have the experience of denying a permit of the Department of Environmental Protection solely on scenic grounds, and it was resolved by the court 6 years later.
Because you brought up billboards. Well, we had outlawed all billboards in Parsippany. Well, somebody's challenging it, and guess what the judge said? Parsippany, you got to fix it.
But the question maybe is whether or not that action is grounded in the same specific directive that the Highlands Act gives us in the council. And John won that case, we know. And that was protecting the view on the entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel of Manhattan. That was considered to be a scenic resource under the state's coastal management policies. And the courts upheld that. So
Lincoln Tunnel?
the Helix, Grand Helix.
Oh.
So what we're hearing is the scenic resources, whatever the Highlands Council defines it to be, in the Highlands. Okay. Scenic resources of the Highlands. So whatever we decide it is.
Well, I was wondering if the staff could come up with a definition and propose it.
We do have a proposed definition.
No, I mean a scenic vista. I see you have the resource protection area.
Oh, okay.
Or
and resource areas and protection areas.
Right. But what about a scenic resource? I mean, I think it's what you've done here is right. We need to have areas of protection areas because of the nature of a scene. It's not just one thing. It's a scene. But if you're saying, since there's no definition in the Act, we have some difficulties here, then can you propose a definition that will pin it down?
And some examples.
Yeah, or a list, like Tim said, start a list. Because, I mean, even you know, another example is the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. I mean, they've been tested, and they're, you know, it's 1/4 mile on either side or ridge to ridge, and that's how they do it. And, you know, they've stopped cell towers, and, you know, they're...
And as your help in Tracy, and as your help in Michael, if I could add on to that, which would help me, Jack will speak also to, we have in Morristown, we have Fort Nonsense, which was, of course, George Washington's encampment during the Revolutionary War. And I know that Vista, from that area, is very important to a lot of people. It's a threatened lawsuit all the time. And you can see, to Burnsville, I can see the bunkers in Parsippany. How far would you go from that? I mean, that's a real-time work exercise that I think we need to go through there. And this goes back to, again, how are we going to encumber some towns in planning areas?
Some people think the skyline of Manhattan is a scenic vista. Really?
I'm trying to find it. Changing.
Well, we're changing.
But I think Scott brings up an interesting point, which maybe we should consider in developing this, which is, you know, the viewpoint. And when where you're viewing it from, if that is an historic place as vetted through one of our other elements, then perhaps automatically it can be listed. I mean, this is the kind of thing, well, connecting the elements that perhaps could help us come up with a defensible.
And this is one approach you could do, is if you turn to page 7, the first paragraph, the approach that was taken for the preservation was just by definition to include all state, this is the bottom of the paragraph, state, county, municipal parks, forests, wildlife management areas. These are all lands that are in public ownership.
Mm-hmm.
That is one approach if you wanted to do that, which wouldn't be infringing on private rights. And that scenic, the implications on those publicly held lands could be the first step if that's the approach you want to take.
As a starting point.
But it would have an impact on private rights because it's...
Yes, it would have an impact, exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that could be a starting point, just like we had starting points with the other two policy papers.
And often the public lands need that protection, too, because they put cell towers and everything else all over them, too.
That's correct.
Can you tolerate a little apocryphal story here?
Are there any other comments on this policy? And the apocryphal story can lead us to dinner.
I used to live in Union City for a period of time, and my office was in Manhattan. And I used to live in Manhattan prior to that, although I'm a New Jersey guy and I was born here and grew up here. I lived in an apartment overlooking the Helix. And you see it as you go down the Helix, and before you get into the tunnel from New Jersey, it's got a sort of a white brick structure with an underground garage that's open and you can see it. Everybody knows it. You know what I'm talking about. I was on the 13th floor of that building. Now, it's already about 250 feet above sea level at that point. Great view in my apartment, which faced out across Manhattan with a 28-foot balcony. I could see north up to Columbus Circle. I could see all the helicopters that sometimes would come in below where I was. The clouds would envelop my balcony. If you went into the bedroom, the living room and the bedroom, you could see Verona all the way to the west.
It was remarkable. Now, that's what I call a scenic vista. And it's not protected. But I would define a scenic vista using criteria like that. But it's not going to apply to every scenic vista that we encounter. Scenic vistas are as varied as humanity. What I think is a scenic vista is someone else might not see. So it is indeed the most subjective. But there are certain things that touch you as a human being when you see it. When you visit a preserved part of any area, and it's beautiful, farmland, for example, if you come over the hill into Long Valley in season, it's the most magnificent view you're ever going to see as you head down toward Old Farmers Road and all of that area. It's just fantastic, and nobody has to define it for you. You just know it, and you feel it. The difficult part for us here is transposing this into words.
So then are we prepared to pay for the guy who owns the lot next to that apartment building, who wants to build a building and have that same vista, not to be able to build it so the person in that 13th floor apartment can still have it? Because that's really what it comes down to. Because for somebody to have it, somebody else can't. And what we're saying is, we're going to protect it for you, but we're going to take away that right from you, so this other person can have it.
This happens in New York City, Kurt, all the time. People buy in high-rise apartment buildings because they love the view, and before you turn around, there's a taller building right next to them.
It happens in the Jersey Shore all the time.
Well, I think the trick for us is to deal with Kurt's comment and also deal with the reality that people often don't at least verbalize their appreciation of the view until it's gone, or until it's really so, you know, permanently threatened that it's too late. So it's so you guys can resolve that.
one starting point, though, one additional starting point of that is you may start to look at those lists from where there is a significant public use of that view. Or nonsense, you know, the Appalachian Trail.
Good point.
I mean, that's the starting point. Clearly, there's change in the landscape. There's loss of things that people appreciate. But, you know, I think part of our task is to not lose those ones that are irreplaceable and defy the region. And they will if we don't take staff of this.
Well, I think that, I mean, that gets to the policy part that Tom read, and whether there are things to add to that, or words to add to that to strengthen it, that would move us toward what you said. Any other comments on this right
here? Did the National Trust go through something with that too? Maybe someone can help on one of the battlefields, whether it was Geddes Field or something, but I think there was some kind of precedent set there, if I recall correctly, when the tower was coming down there.
Geddes.
Right.
Or Manassas.
Yes.
Manassas,
yeah.
Virginia.
Well, maybe something we can refer to that'll help us.
And they won.
Okay, we have two more policy areas to discuss, financial component and the wastewater treatment tonight. So we're going to take, it's 7:05, let's come back here at 7:30.
I hope we didn't have to do fish sitting
there. I know.
Sushi.
I know.
That's not the
bring that lunch and put them in the fridge with their names on it. There's a whole history.
It's not something
else. No, right. It's about something else. There's a whole history. I think it's one of the most important things.
Yeah, I'd like to say that's more.
Thank you.